Good evening, everybody. Today is December 9th, 2015, and we're coming together in a meeting. We called for an emergency meeting for the sole purpose, ultimately, to get active and start working in the courts in a collective way. We got a pretty good response today, so we got quite a few people on the call tonight, and hopefully we'll get more as time goes on. As everybody knows, National Liberty Alliance is an active organization. We'll call ourselves an organization or assembly of people. Maybe assembly of people is better because really we're moving into the courts as administrators to bring back the common law and therefore bringing back due process. And, of course, that's the major problem. So we have been doing habeas corpuses now for a little while. We've got 105 cases going through the system that are already in intake. Anybody can check on the process and where we're at. They can check on their own cases by going up to the directory, I believe it is. Let me double check that. Yes, the directory, highlight directory. And you can click on track habeas corpus petitions. And you can see all of the habeas corpuses we have up there. Now, you can click on the top petitioner's case, and it'll organize according to alphabetical order. Or you can go to the right side and click on status, and it'll open up and run the list according to number one status all the way down through, I think we got eight steps to go through to get to the final part where we do indictments. We are close. Well, we actually have arrived in a few cases where we need to be thinking about doing some indictments. But before we move into that, we want to put a little more pressure, a little more information. You know, look, I hear little things here and there, and it's a lot of good stuff. And I know Gerard was talking with me tonight. My ear was half with him and half trying to work to get a page together for tonight's meeting. But if Gerard's on, maybe he can talk a little bit about maybe that the sheriffs are starting to kind of lean our way and realizing that there's a problem and starting to identify us as really the people. And so hopefully I've got that right, what he was talking to me about. But if he's here, maybe he can get on the mic and express that a little better than I can. But in any event, we've been having meetings. We just started it, actually. On a certain night, we're having a meeting just for people who have cases. We're not telling anybody what night it is or what day it is, or we're not telling anybody where it is or anything, because the only people we want at that place are the people who have cases. If you have a case, you need to be at that meeting. And in order to find out where and when and how to get into that meeting, you'll need to contact Linda. If you haven't already been contacted yet to be told about that meeting and you need that information, get a hold of Linda. She should be on your Skype if you have a case going. And if not, you can call through me. But you should get Skype and get her on your Skype contacts in order to exchange information and do the necessary things we need to do in order to take this your court case through. We have 105 cases, so we're expecting to have 105 people, unless they can't make it. Of course, some people might not be able to make it, depending on the time we're doing it at. But if they have a case, they should really work hard to get to the meetings. At this meeting, we will be doing updates and answering some questions and giving a little more information that we might not give in public. Now, with 105 cases, I'm going to expect this, and I think we all need to expect this, that we're going to get 105 people on the phone in the next 2 days to make a phone call. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. And keep in mind, if you have a case, then, of course, you're going to want 105 people calling on your behalf. The phone calls might be going to a sheriff, might be going to a chief judge or a clerk. I'm not sure exactly. It could be going to a lower court judge, maybe a town judge. So we're not sure. You know, each case is different, and we're going to start to put the pressure. Way back when we were working on Steve's case out there in Utah, which was successful to get him out of the courts, and out of jail. But they did put him on probation, and we do intend on going back. We just recently sent a contempt of court to these people and ordered them to obey the law and to obey that law. We'll be following up on that very, very soon. But right now we have kind of an emergency situation, and we actually have a lot of emergency situations, but one where one of our members is about to lose their home under fraud pretenses, and that's Maud from Long Island. Now, she's due in court. These people really played a slick game, you know, sort of a, what would you call it, you know, the hide-the-chip game when they put a marble or something or a chip underneath a cup and, you know, move the cups around. That's exactly what they've done. But this is it in a nutshell. They go into the courts. They get the courts to do a summary judgment just on paperwork, and they never really go through anything that gives the person whose home they're taking or the property they're taking. They're never getting due process. So it's almost an automatic, and the judge signs off and so on. Once that process is done, they then come and give the eviction notice. Someone comes and serves the paper, tell them they got to leave. And most people will leave because they don't know. They think they've been evicted. They got to go by a certain date. They'll give them a date. They got to get out. But, of course, some people who are going to fight for it won't go, and they'll discover, unless they already know, that only the sheriff can throw you out. Nobody else can get you out of your home. Anybody else, you can go to tell them to go to Hades. But in any event, they do that process, and it takes 2 months or so. They auction off the house. I skipped a step. Once they get the paperwork and file everything, then they call for a phony auction, and they won't show up on time. So everybody who might show up for the auction will leave because they figure maybe it was canceled, and they'll come an hour or two later. That's what they did down in Long Island, and then of course there's no one there to try to purchase it. So they purchase it. They have a holding company that purchases it for them, and it's just a con job. Now they've moved the control of the house over into this this new holding company, whatever the name of that holding company might be. The holding company then does another eviction notice, and then they move forward, or does one or two eviction notices, tries to get the people to leave, and then they go down to the town court. Now they've left the Supreme Court to get the first paper done, and the first question is why didn't they seize the property? They're afraid. This tells us something about the courts and the way the court system is working, and the fear that these judges still do have. Under certain circumstances, they do still get frightened. And I think this is one of them. They're afraid to make the move to have the sheriff go and remove the house and to sign that paper, okay? And then their fingerprints will be all over the case because they now played part of the fraud to steal a home. What they do is really, really slick. And that's why the sheriff didn't know anything about it when the sale came up. When we called the sheriff when it happened, he didn't know anything about it. And he never went out because nothing ever happened. So anyway, the holding company then goes down to the town court and files a landlord-tenant grievance for eviction and asks for for a final motion to have the person evicted, and they write in the paperwork that I think in her case they want to charge her something like $2,500 a month, and so many months are due, and that she owes them money, and they also want to get the court, they want to get even the lawyer's fees. I mean, this is outrageous. Okay, and to have her evicted as a tenant. Now at that point in time, the town court will have to call the sheriff in order to have the eviction to take place. Well, we've made notification to the sheriff. We laid out the fraud in the court. We sent the papers out today. And Maud, by the way, you'll be getting two papers overnight tomorrow, a copy for yourself and a copy for the people that are trying to evict you, that whoever shows up for that, some lawyer. We purposely didn't mail it to them. You can give it to them in court. They've been served in court. Matter of fact, we do want to have people go down there with Maud. Anybody that's out in the Long Island area or willing to travel out to Long Island on Friday morning at 9:30, I think it is. We have the information. We'll give that in a minute. But if they can make it out there to support Maud, to be in that courtroom, And maybe if one person can take control of actually serving the paper so that they actually been served by an individual other than Maud. But let me think about this. No, it doesn't even matter. Maud, you can even give it to them because you're not serving them. You're not the one writing the paper. We are. We wrote the papers. So we wrote an information to the court, and we also wrote a mandamus, a one-page mandamus and a one-page information. We filed that with the federal court today and down in that district. I think it's in Brooklyn. So we filed it with the federal court today. We also mailed a copy overnight to the sheriff. We mailed a copy overnight to the court, and we mailed two copies to Maud. Again, Maud, the one copy is for you. The other copy is to be given to the lawyer at the court case. You know, they pull all these surprises in their games. They move so quickly that they didn't even get an index number, nor do they have a name of a judge or anything. And they got these papers out because they want to move very quickly to get this house away from her. So look, we'll just return the favor. They'll be served there and have to deal with it right then and there and how they're going to respond to the case. And so the papers they'll get in the court, and they're available up online. It's a two-page paper, as I mentioned. So let's everybody go out to the website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and go up on the right, go up to the, committees, highlight committees. You come down to courtroom observer committees. And in there, you will see call to action. So this is a call to action page. Okay, click on that, and you'll come to a page called, obviously, call to action. Now, I got some basic information up here for this particular case, and I may dress it up a little bit after the meeting tonight and tomorrow morning to be a little more pleasant to read and be able to interpret a little better. But people can click right on the top there. It says start calling to help in the following case. Okay, you can click on Maud Pollack or Pulak, but is the last name. I'm not sure on the pronunciation. But Maud Pollack eviction case PDF. And if you click on that, you'll get a picture of what's going on. And we lay the fraud on the page pretty quick. I'm going to read through it very quickly. And it says here, the grand jury has responded. This is called an information. This goes to the Southampton Town Justice Court. And it's an information. The grand jury is responding under seal to this court on behalf of Maud N. Pollack, an 82-year-old widow, the victim of mortgage fraud. See Exhibit B, affidavit attached, 7 pages. We hereby inform this court that there is an active investigation concerning fraud, RICO, and contempt of court perpetrated by Immigrant Savings Bank, Long Island, and others, and that the Federal District Court ordered them to abate at law all proceedings in and relating to the Supreme Court of New York, County of Suffolk, index number, and we give the number statutory C, Exhibit C. Filed, fraud judgment, affidavit, memorandum of decision attached, 14 pages. Now, we didn't attach all the attachments, it's just these 2 pages. It says the following ruse was perpetrated against the victim, Maud N. Pollack, Nationwide Equities presented fraudulently signed documents creating a fraudulent mortgage agreement between the victim and Immigrant Mortgage. Over time, due process was bypassed when Immigrant Mortgage procured a summary judgment, see Exhibit D. Summary judgment attached, 1 page. Again, no attachments here. Immigrant Mortgage fraudulently auctioned the property to retained Realty Inc. The New York Supreme Court issued no seizure of property supported by an affidavit and executed by a sheriff, which is the required by law. They retained Realty Inc., then filed fraudulent doctrines to take ownership of the property, gave notice to the victim to vacate, then pretending to be the landlord, fraudulently filed petition in Southampton Town Justice Court as an instrumentation to evict the victim and thereby complete the robbery of the victim's home, turning the tranquil twilight years of the 82-year-old victim into a nightmare. Now, the second page is basically an order under Quorum Nobis. That's the King's Bench, writ of mandamus. And it basically says, Southampton Town Justice Court, now being fully informed, is ordered to abate at law all proceedings in and relating to the petition to evict filed by Retained Realty, Inc. in the State of New York, Southampton Town Justice Court, County of Suffolk, index number unknown. See Exhibit A, petitions attached, three pages. The court, December 9, 2015, sealed and signed. Copied, Suffolk County Sheriff Vincent DeMarco. Okay, so that's pretty much the page. You can read it at any time you want. This is the kind of thing we're going to put on this page. We're going to start on this page, which is, again, called a call to action. We're going to start posting the cases. And we've got right now 105 cases going through the system. We have about 12 or 13, maybe 14, I haven't really counted it, cases that are active. And we need to start making phone calls. So on this page, we will be putting the next case that we want everyone to call, and we'll give them some basic information. Now, on the call to action page, and this is, and again, I'm going to straighten this up and clean this up, and we're also going to listen to everybody that maybe has some ideas and on what we should add and how we should go about this, and we'll develop this and grow this page and stay focused. We may be doing maybe two cases, possibly three a week, which we're going to be asking everybody, as many people as we can. If we have 105 people that have cases, we're expecting 105 people to respond. We have, I don't know, 50 or 100 people. I don't know how many people we have in the courtroom observers group. So we would want everyone to make phone calls. And we'll ask people in the case of Maud to make two phone calls. Okay. So this week we're asking everybody tomorrow and Friday to make phone calls. And tonight, we will put in here more information that might be helpful for people so that they can call up and something what they might say. But I'll start off with some examples, and then we'll see what other people have to say about that. Maybe they have other ideas. Start calling to help. I'm going to pretty much read the page. Start calling to help the following case, Maud Pollock eviction case, PDF. You can download it. Southampton Town Court, Town Justice Court, 57 North Road, Hampton Bays, New York, 11946, and the phone number. Now, the phone call, and again, I'll put this in better order. I was in a hurry to just throw the information up on the page, but I'll put it in a much better readable way and be able to gain the information on what you need to get the phone number or whatever. But phone call, ask the chief clerk, and we give her name, and ask for the chief clerk, get a hold of them, we give her name, and then ask to talk to the presiding judge for the concerning the fraudulent eviction case of Maud Pollock. And we're to call the court and tell them that that you are with, this is some suggestions on however you want to handle this. But we're just throwing things on here, and we'll probably have a couple of different ideas, and you may even have your own idea. But remember, everybody needs to be polite. Call the court and tell them that you're with the Unified Your State Common Law Grand Jury. If you're calling from California, I'm with the Unified California Common Law Grand Jury. If you're calling from Idaho, I'm from the Unified Idaho State Common Law Grand Jury. New Jersey, Florida, whatever. Just tell them that that's the grand jury you're with. Acting with the other 49 unified states as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury to bring justice to all judges and clerks not obeying the law of the land, U.S. Constitution, Article 4, Clause 2. And that in this case of Maud Pollock, her property was stolen under fraud. Okay, now we're going to add more stuff here. We're going to get some ideas tonight. And whatever ideas we come up with tonight, I'm sure we can kind of apply the basic idea to all the cases. And the key thing is to ring the phones off the hook, obviously. This worked great in Steve's case out in Utah. I mean, they were begging us to stop calling, okay? Anyway, the other thing we want everyone to do is to call the sheriff. So we were asking everybody to make two phone calls. Now, the paperwork is hitting them tomorrow morning, so they'll have it tomorrow morning. And we can let them know, well, we've mailed you something overnight. You should have gotten it today. So maybe don't start the calls until maybe noontime or something. Or you can wait till Friday, or you can do it on Monday also. But that's running kind of late. But because the hearing is on Monday morning, so it needs to be done in the next 2 days, and you can't do it over the weekend. Okay, anyway, call the sheriff, ask if he is going to protect Maud's rights of due process. Ask if he's going to be out there to protect her property and prevent them from taking this property away. Remind the sheriff that the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury has sent him a paper. They have kept him abreast of this case from day one. He's been copied every paper that was applied in the courts. And also, he was also applied, you know, given the paper we just read, which again defines the fraud that they have perpetrated upon Maud. So we want to know, are you going to protect her due process? Are you going to protect her property? Are you going to execute a warrant for an eviction when it's really a whole thing is a ruse and it's a fraud? And if anything, you should be there to take the property. But in this case, you can't be because there is no due process. And that's why they shortcut the Supreme Court here in New York. And they played this ruse. What a game. The way these people put these things together. Okay. And anyway, also, we have a comment area here so people can also put comments and put the ideas and different things that they think might work well. Hey, let's try. Why don't we say this or why don't we say that or whatever. But tonight, right now, I'm going to open the mics up in a minute or two and take some ideas, do a little brainstorming. But the key thing is this. If we're going to save this nation, we got to get active. And how do we get active in the courts? We do it with the habeas corpus to begin with. It starts to give us power. It starts to give us authority. It starts to give us recognition. Once we break through that envelope, okay, we're in the courts. We're looking to come into the 94 federal courts. We have 94 districts. And we have plenty of people for each district, so we could man those courts as administrators and work to develop within our counties, within our federal district, the necessary people to pull together grand juries, trial juries, and do different things. Once we get into the federal courts, it's a no-brainer. All the courts below will be controlled by the federal courts because it's a violation of due process is what we're going to be battling on. So we'll then be able to get in on the county level very quickly. So our strategy is to work into the federal courts. Very early on, our strategy was to work into the county courts trying to break through. We learned it's not going to happen that way. And even if we did get through in a few counties here or there, every county is going to be an uphill battle as the next county next to it. It doesn't matter. But on a federal level, because they're all connected, it'll be one breakthrough into the whole system rather quickly once it's done, and we'll be able to develop all 94 districts very quickly, and then we easily will be able to order, indict, and actually have arrested with no problem. The marshals will then go down, make the arrest of anyone who doesn't obey in order for the people to get into their courts. And we'll lay the details of those things as we get closer. But it all begins with what we're doing now. This and the papers that we are writing into the courts. We have 12 papers, 13 papers. 13 is going out now. 14 will be going out next week. And then we're working on number 15, which will probably go out sometime in January. That's the one to the sheriffs. That's going to be a little richy. It's going to cost a bare minimum, probably $8,000, $10,000, maybe even $15,000 to get that particular job done. There are 3,134 counties, so we got a lot of papers to run off, a lot of stamps, a lot of envelopes, a lot of work. But we need to get the job done. We have to get one paper into the court for the sheriff, and we have to be very clear and focused on our message to the sheriff. Meanwhile, our faxes machines are running, and we're still sending out papers, and we're going to continue that, and that's the key. We send out to all federal servants and all state-level elected servants, including a lot of appointed individuals on the federal level and also, appointed individuals on the federal level. And, of course, we, as everyone should know by now, everything we do or say or think on paper, that is, we make sure that the FBI gets a copy of it, so we're right in the light. We're not hiding anything. We make sure that every sheriff gets a copy. We're right in the light. We're not hiding anything. And we make sure every marshal gets it. So they get our papers, and so no judge can twist our words to with these. And, of course, we file them in all 94 courts, and that, again, it prevents them from expunging our paperwork. We're ready to go for indictments. But before we go for indictments, we need this next paper out, going out this week, and probably the one after that going out next week. Then we're ready as far as paperwork is concerned. The other thing we need to be doing, and be ready to do indictments, is what we're doing right now here on the phones. We need success. We need pressure. We need stress on these people to make sure they obey the law. And that's the big thing. If you don't say anything else, you say, I'm one of the people. I'm from Florida. I'm with the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury out here in Florida. We're unified here in Florida also. And we're sick and tired of all the fraud that's going on in the court in RICO. And we want to know, are you going to obey the law of the land, or are you going to break it? That's what I want to know. Because I'm one of the people that sit on the grand jury, and I am curious what you're going to do in this case. And this is how we have to do every case. You need to talk to them with authority, but you have to be polite and meek, humble, but authoritative. You don't give anything but your first name. They need not know anything else. I'm one of the grand jury. I don't give my last name. I become a target maybe from all of the criminals out there, and there's a lot of criminals out there in the courts, unfortunately, and we intend, and I wouldn't pull no punches or anything. We intend on indicting anyone, anybody judge or any clerk or any servant who just refuses to obey the law of the land. We're going to indict, and we're going to push our sheriffs and our marshals to get out there and make the arrests. So, with that, I'm going to open up the mics, and we'll see what other people think on these things. Oh, yeah,
John, go ahead. I got a question. As far as calling the sheriffs go, like this sheriff in Maud's case, he's been contacted once. He didn't know what was going on. He seems like he's a good guy. He said he would uphold the law. So I have a suggestion that we come up with some kind of a rating, 1, 2, or 3, sheriffs that have been contacted that seem to be friendly, 1, 2 could be mediocre, 3 could be a complete communist. That way, when the people are going to call a sheriff, if he's been contacted, we know who he is and what he's doing. They should be prepared, you know, so that they can hold their conversations accordingly. Like this guy, we've talked to him. He said he would uphold the law. That's a good thing. Some of them don't even want to talk to you. So if we could think about, you know, how can we rate the sheriff? If we have that information beforehand, and it would be very easy to get within a couple of phone calls, just so people know how to prepare themselves when talking to this guy. You know, it's going to be much easier to talk to somebody who's focused on upholding the law as opposed to somebody who completely hates us. And we have to conduct ourselves accordingly. So that's my suggestion. Maybe come up with some kind of a little code that we could put next to the sheriff so that people know what they're getting into when they call and adjust themselves accordingly. That's all.
Okay, well, we do know that the sheriff, as Gerard mentioned, is really claiming to uphold the Constitution. So when we call him, we really want to be very, very careful, very polite with this guy, not put him under pressure and let him know that we heard and we appreciate that you have told us already that you were going to uphold the law, but we did want to make a call to let you know that this woman is being defrauded, and she's an 82-year-old woman. She's paid her dues of life, and she's in her twilight years, and she owns this home, and who are these people to defraud her and throw her in the streets in the twilight of her life? They don't have that right to throw anyone. And we're expecting you and hoping that you're going to give us the answer, that you're going to be out there to protect this woman's rights. We're going to be in the courts on some of us will be in the courts on Monday. And the papers have already been served. You got a copy of that, Sheriff, and we appreciate your assistance to protect we the people and the Constitution for the United States of America. Anything of that similar kind of thing.
Yeah, you could even tell him that you're calling in support of him because you heard that he's a constitutional sheriff, and we're calling to let you know that the grand jury is watching, and we're calling in support of you. You know,
right.
we're the people are watching, and we support you upholding the Constitution as you said you would. So you're kind of complimenting him from the get-go. I mean, a really bad guy, you know. Look, if a sheriff supports the people will support the sheriff. So you can let that be known. And the bad guy, you could say, look, the people know, and you are an elected official. And if you don't uphold the Constitution, we're going to have committees and people working in your local community to get you out of office and put somebody who really knows, who's willing to uphold the Constitution in your seat, because he's an elected official. So you need to, and he's our servant, and we need to talk to him respectfully, though, like that. Okay.
All right. One other thing. I spoke with Carl earlier today before this phone call tonight, and he's going to be running some meetings here. I think he's going to do it a little earlier, maybe 8 o'clock. I'm not sure. But everybody could work this out. But the purpose will be really focusing in the courtroom watchers meeting and basically discussing the cases that are coming up, what's going on, ideas and thoughts of what to say in this case, and so on and so forth. Eventually, someone else, I think, will be running it. Carl is overseeing it as a national coordinator. And so he's kind of overseeing it and working with, I believe, Jeff and I think it's Laura. And so eventually they will be running it, or they will get someone else to work with them and we'll be running the room. But it's going to be a short meeting, half hour, I suggest, maybe hour at most, but half hour, basically to talk about the next case coming up and come up with ideas and points. We will be putting some information on the page as the cases are going, and we're also sending out emails to let everybody know a new case going, need your help, visit this page, which again is the call to action page. For the details on helping one of our fellow people. And remember, it could be you. You need to make the phone call. Everybody could make one or two phone calls a week. Everybody. It's not too much to ask. Not at all. And if we have two cases, or even three, everybody could make 4 to 6 phone calls a week. We'll put the time on when to start. Well, the case will show up, and when the case shows up, it's time to call. And we'll put the emails out. We'll put the call out. Also, we will then, when the case expires, as far as making the phone calls, we'll pull them down. We'll put an end date there, and then we'll pull them down. So if we don't pull them down right away, at least you know it's already been done. No, it'll just be pulled down because we've got to do an end date. We're opening up. We'll just pull it down. So once it's removed, then there's no more need for calls, and you'll see the next one that'll pop up, and you'll do that. Again, you'll probably see 2 or 3 a week. I don't think we will move more than 2 or 3 a week because I don't want to overwhelm people, and I do want everyone to participate. We need to get 100, 150, 200 calls to the sheriff. We need to get that done, or to the court, or to the chief judge himself, or whoever it is, whatever it is that we have to put the pressure on, whoever it is. That's where the calls will go, and that's where the information will be. So anybody that would like to go to those meetings, fine. But even if you don't go to those meetings, please do respond when the message goes out. Or check often. Check every day. Check every couple of days. See what new case is up there. And pick up the phone and make the call. Remember, you need to do these calls before 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening on the time zone of wherever we're calling. And you also have to do it after 9 a.m. Again, you have to know the time zone. And you'll know, we'll put the time zone of the case, of the court or of the place at the time when we post it. I didn't think about that today, but obviously it's Eastern Standard Time here in Long Island, so that's the time zone. Those in California have to adjust accordingly and so on. Okay, with that, I'm going to open up Q&A. And,
John?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Nathan. Just one strategic question. If everyone's at the court on Monday morning, is somebody going to be guarding the property while that's going on?
Well, there would be no need for that because, there is no way. I don't believe they're even going to think about trying to take that property in any way, shape, or form without having the sheriff do it. You see, the way to get the sheriff to do it was a landlord-tenant disagreement because the other way, the fraud is too much in the face. And if any sheriff that knows the law wouldn't apply that seizure of property without a sworn affidavit and a wedding signature, and the judge surely is not going to put his signature on that one. And that's why they play the ruse that they do. What a game they play to turn this property into a landlord-tenant concern and owing back rent, and they want them out. And the sheriff, now that we notify the sheriff of this problem, now he has to protect this woman. And so they're going to have to call on the sheriff to throw her out. And as long as he's obeying the law and seeing the fraud. As a matter of fact, I should hope he should go and arrest them, and we'll indict. As a matter of fact, we're going to suggest that. He should go arrest these people. We will indict, and we'll continue to do the necessary research of the case further for more evidence. But we got plenty. We got all the evidence we need in the court because the whole thing is done in court. Due process right there alone. But they're not going to go seize the property, do anything. They got to first have the court make a decision, and then the court's going to say to Maud, you got to be out of there in 3 days. The sheriff will be there at noontime on this date, and if you're not out, they're going to move you out for you. That's what they'll do if they make any decision. I got to believe the judge has to be insane with what pressure we're going to put on him, and also what paperwork that we wrote and filed to him. He's got to realize we're coming out after him. He's been ordered, and he better not be found in contempt of court, because we're going to go out after him too, and we'll eventually end up with an indictment for that judge also, should he not obey. The other thing, again, we have two hits on this, not only to prevent the judge from doing anything stupid, but also to make sure the sheriff knows the fraud and not to get involved in it. Because I'm going to make a personal phone call to the sheriff as foreman to see if I can talk to the sheriff directly to let him know that we're expecting him to do his duty, expecting him, if he's got any question concerning the fraud, let's talk about it, because the whole thing is a fraud. And we really would, sheriff, if you understand what's really going on, you need to make an arrest here too. Quite a few arrests, and we'll indict. If you call us, we will call the grand jury together. We'll get local people. We'll call local people for the grand jury, 26 of them, and we will offer the case, and you can go talk to the grand jury, and we'll assist in the writing of the papers and the process to go forward. So we'll explain all that to him, and hopefully he'll take us up on that, and that'll be a real big move for us. So let's see what they do and see what we got to do.
Don't forget, they're treating this like a tenant eviction, so they have to, the bare minimum they got to do is follow the law on a tenant eviction, which is a 4-day notice from the sheriff, and sometimes after the 4-day notice, they give another 24-hour notice. They don't all do that, though. So even if they wanted to come in, they couldn't come in Monday. They'd have to come nail a 4-day notice to the door, and the sheriff would have to serve it. That's how they do an eviction. And they're saying that she's a tenant, so they at least have to give her some tenant's rights, okay?
And now that the judge knows that it's a fraud, he becomes part of that fraud, okay? And now that the sheriff knows it's a fraud, he becomes part of that fraud. They don't have to believe it. They can continue to look to find out for themselves, but they have to act on the information given to them. It's a fraud. And we've given them the information, and we've given a sworn affidavit. We've used Maud's affidavit, which we attached to it, that she had written originally for the case, for the habeas corpus. And it lays out the case clearly, what is done and what's going on, and the fraud that they've committed against her. And also the action, the way they're going about. The big question, and I'm going to discuss to the sheriff with this, the big question is this. Let me ask you, why didn't the judge that supposedly has taken this property, of course, without due process, and under summary judgment, which is illegal in the United States, by the way, Sheriff. But why didn't he just sign the papers and send them over to you so that you can seize the property and just take it over? Why didn't he do that? That proves the fact that he knew it was a fraud. I'm talking about the judge. And that the lawyers involved, that they have to play this ruse. They say, okay, well, how are we going to get the property? Well, hey, let's go over and let's become the landlord. We'll send her some papers telling her she's got to leave. And then we'll write a paper. She owes us 2-3 months because she's been there. We auctioned it off 2 months ago, so we own it. She owes us rent. We served her with notice to leave. She refuses to leave. And now this is with a landlord. She's the tenant. And that's a lie from Hades again. And again, it proves the fraud. All the proof we need is already on paper. It's already done in the habeas corpus and these papers we filed today. So with that, let me open up Q&A. Okay. Star 6. And anybody got any ideas? Let's do some brainstormings. And see where we go. California Dave, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Okay, thank you, John. A lot of people are asking me about how do they reconcile focusing on the 94 federal courts versus the 3,000 counties, and why don't we maybe just focus on the 94 courts and those counties where you have the 105 cases, and especially Maud's case, maybe we bring the feds and the marshal down on them at the same time. What do you think?
Well, that's exactly our plan, but the nut is going to be cracked in one day at one time. Remember this, once we get any kind of an indictment that sticks and processes, once we get one of those, then we know where to go to get them, don't we? Then all we have to do is put in the paperwork in any federal court district, and if they don't respond within 48 hours, then we'll send them a paper giving them a final 48 hours. We'll find themselves indicted themselves. The grand jury has already concluded that you're going to be indicted within the next 48 hours unless you act upon it. And if they don't, then we can go and bring the indictment over to the place where we have friendly people who are willing to step up and uphold the Constitution. And we'll get the indictment, even if we have to do a California indictment in New York. Oh, well, it's a federal district. It's a whole federal system together. They're under one United States Supreme Court. And you know what? When desperate times comes, desperate measures are applied, you know? So anything that's extraordinary, it is what it is. Justice is going to take its place, and we the people can make it happen if we do it. And that's what we're doing. We've got to go forward. So that is kind of the plan. And the plan is not an independent plan. It's a unified plan. We the people have to stand together. You know the saying, united we stand, divided we fall. So we're going to come spearheading together as a nation, as a people from every state and every county, pushing this into the court and then developing through the system. And then we're going to work on training the people and helping people to get together. Now, we haven't written the book yet, and we're working on it. I got to get back to that. We got to get back to that and prepare for getting into the court so people will have a manual so they have something to go on. But in the beginning, you know, it'll be a little chaotic, maybe first 30 to 90 days. But we have to be patient, we have to work together, and we have to trust in the leadership until at some point in time when, you know, you'll be able to act on your own. But we have to be trained together, we have to come in with principles, we have to come in with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, we have to come in with knowledge, and that's just going to take a little time. But meanwhile, we can do tremendous amounts of work collectively together as we work through the entire United States. And at that point, we'll start to have an overflood of people coming in, and we'll be able to flood the counties and fill the positions very quickly. But again, we do want to control. And it's up to the people that have been involved with National Liberty Alliance for a while that know that we're people of principle. And we will hold that principle and we'll control that principle and make sure it's applied. Because if it's done wrong, we're going to lose it all. We'll just become them. It'll be chaotic. We'll lose. So we have to do it with principle. And every time, anything worthwhile getting takes time. And it requires patience. So let's stick with patience. Let's work together. And let's take it down together and build it back up together. And we'll be free soon in the sense of being able to act independently. But look, if you don't have the knowledge and the understanding, the mindset, bear in mind, you're going to call for a grand jury. You have to orientate that grand jury. So we have to get all that information together on what needs to be done in order to orientate the grand jury. What knowledge do they need to have? Then we also have to prepare for the writing of the case once they have an indictment. And so we have to write that indictment up and work with them. And we have to make sure we're doing their will because they're the grand jury. We're doing their will and that we get it right before we sign that paper off and let the foreman sign off. And then we apply it into the courts. And then we're going to make sure that we get a real trial jury, one that's not tainted. And again, this is all education. And so it makes sense that until you're educated, you have to stay under the wing of the leadership until we can get there and get you educated. And then you're off on your own, four people in a county. And in the case of the federal districts, let's say like in New York, there's about 15 counties in each federal district, roughly speaking. So that means that the 15 counties have Each one of them have four administrators. So that's 15, 30, 60 administrators in a federal district. So if the crime took place in a particular county, well, the administrators in that county would work the necessary information to do the indictment and to gather together the jury for the trial. And they can do that all in their own county, right there in their own courtroom for the federal district. They don't need to go up to the federal court to do this. Now, maybe in some cases they will need, maybe because the prosecutor is calling for an indictment. Well, they may have to then gather together up there and get the people up out of the whatever county and bring them into the federal court and be there to make sure that the grand jury or even the trial juries are not abused by these people. So we got a lot of work to do. We have to plan it slowly and move slowly, but I think it's going to happen very quick when it breaks open. Any final statement, Dave? Go ahead.
Yeah, so do we like the idea of maybe focusing on those first few jurisdictions that you're getting ready to indict, maybe even bringing
that's
down...
That is where we're going to get into the courts. And we have cases all over. We have a case in California, I believe. We have quite a few cases in California. So it could happen in California. It could happen. We had a lot of cases in New York. It could happen in New York. But it also could happen in Ohio, Utah, New Mexico. It could happen in Texas. It could happen in the Dakotas. Wherever it breaks, that's where we're going.
And the phone calls are focusing on those cases that are ready to go first. And so it's just natural. So they'll be ready for indictment first, and we'll all be calling on those cases. We'll all be helping each other, but we'll all be focusing on the case that came ripe next. And so, we will be focused on those cases. And you know, we're not going to be moving 100 cases aren't going to be at the same place at the same time.
On those first few cases, can we bring in the marshal to help the sheriff?
Well, it starts off, depends on where the case is, what the case is, and so on and so forth. If it's most of these cases will be the federal marshals that will be involved with this. But it turns out in this case, because of the way they ran this ruse, okay, it's going to be the sheriff that's the guy. But remember, if you have a marshal that won't act, the real power is getting 15, in the case of New York, getting 15 sheriffs together to go up and kick his butt and do the job for him. And that's how it's got to be done. If the marshal is not going to act on a judge or something or a situation, a clerk or someone that needs to be arrested, then we pull all the sheriffs of the counties within that federal district to act, get together in one accord. And we have to, you know, go and teach them also that, hey, look at, you know, you guys got to save the Constitution. You got to save America. This is your job. And if you don't want to do that, step aside and let someone else be sheriff.
Just one further thought, John, just real important. Nobody's brought this up or thought about it. In Maud's case, since they went to the local court, technically that local judge has control over the eviction, and he could quash it if he wants to make a name for himself.
That's right.
To be a good guy. That gives the local judge a chance to say, I'm not doing this. This is fraud. And so don't forget about the local judge, educating him that he should not be involved in an eviction that was obtained by fraud. And so maybe that local judge needs some calling and some local people to push on him too. Because he could kill it. He could kill at least the eviction part.
So just
as a quick
recap of the call to action, what is your call to action for people like in the next couple days?
We want everybody to make phone calls. And when you make the phone call, I think the idea of making the phone call should say something to who you are, where you're from. My name is Dave. I'm from California. We organized the Unified California Common Law Grand Jury here in California. We are part of the other 49 states who have organized together the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And we're here to make sure the Constitution is being adhered to. That's the message we need to be getting across the board constantly through. They need to know we're coming from every place in America. They need to know we didn't come up with the name Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We are the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We have executed this in every state. They need to know this. And your phone call with your number coming through, that's going to tell them exactly what it is. And again, you just give them your first name, you know. We don't have to give them any other information.
Okay, thank you. Dave's out.
Thank you, David. Okay, let's go to the next caller is Mary from Tennessee. Go right ahead.
Yes, good evening, John. It's Mary from Pennsylvania.
Oh, it says Tennessee. Mary from Pennsylvania.
I'm sorry, I had you on speaker. Mary from Pennsylvania. I just wanted to make a comment on or throw out some food for thought. With addressing these sheriffs, and definitely speaking with authority, I wouldn't ask them what they intended to do. I would approach them at this stage. They've been informed that they have the constitutional authority. They are the constitutional authority. That's how I would approach it, is with you having the constitutional authority, we, the unified United States common law grand jury, wants you to know that we're supporting you. We are going to be here to back you. We'll do the indictments with you.
Well, that's
you
good.
Know,
and also, and
fully
also
expecting them, they need to do this. They now at least know, and we need to let them know we're aware. You are the constitutional authority. We are who is here to back you.
Well, that does a very good point. I agree with that. But just remember one thing. We are going to code the sheriffs, as Gerard said. That's a fantastic idea. When we know we have a sheriff that is already saying he's willing to protect and serve the Constitution, he may not know it that well, but he's willing to do that, and he acknowledges that, we do want to try to treat him a little better than we would someone else, in the sense that we're speaking about that we know that he's going to do the right thing, type of thing. Maybe from
Absolutely.
That kind of an attitude, you know?
Absolutely.
So, and we're here to support him. And if you're calling from Pennsylvania, you can say, and by the way, Sheriff, you know, I'm calling from Pennsylvania. I'm with the Unified Pennsylvania State Common Law Grand Jury. But bear in mind, there is a New York State Common Law Grand Jury, and they got quite a few. They're pretty large themselves, and they will be right behind you because, after all, we are altogether unified as 50 states to clean up these courts, to get the Constitution back into the courts, and put away these judges that refuse to obey the law of the land. So these are all, you know, things you can say and talk as you're going through. So we have a lot of ideas coming up just on the phone call. And we will be posting as much as we can up on the page with all kinds of different ideas. I'm sure Linda's on the call tonight. This call is being recorded anyway, so it was good that we did record it. And she can go through and pull up a lot of notes and help us to get all this basic good ideas, list them out, and we'll get them up onto the website.
Sure. Now, even if a sheriff has not voiced his support of the Constitution, if he's been informed that he is the constitutional authority, that is how I would speak with him.
Absolutely.
I would, you know, these are the expectations. We are the common law grand jury. You're the constitutional authority. We are supporting you. We're supporting you in carrying out your constitutional duty. This isn't open for negotiation or discussion. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're informed. They need to wake up and do their job.
Well, that's right, and we are trying to do the best we can. You can even ask them, hey, look, we've been sending memos and informations and court cases to all the sheriffs so that they can become educated. Have you been getting them? Have you been reading them? How's that working for you? The other thing is to remember, you know, they may respond something about anti-common law, that there is no common law, because some lawyer might tell them that, and then you can refer them to the Seventh Amendment, because a common law court is what is required. It says here, in suits of common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. right there, Seventh Amendment, the rules of the common law, not the rules of chancery, not a statutory court, but the rules of the common law. And the common law is we the people that ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America and all the laws that operate underneath that. That's the basic foundation of the American common law. Okay, let me move to the next caller.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, Mary. Good ideas. Thank you. Okay, next caller is anonymous. It's a 480 number. Give us your first name and your state.
Patrick, New York.
How you doing, Patrick?
Good.
What state?
A little tired, but I've been working on...
what state you calling in from?
Oh, the state's New York.
Oh, good. New York. Go ahead.
Yep. And I was writing down some things when you were first talking about... one of the things I wanted to just share with everybody is to avoid hearsay when we're calling and making claims or anything like that other than what we actually know.
Good point.
And
yes.
also not to forget the different there's honor and dishonor and being professional and stuff like that, like everyone's already talked about. But I just think that's one of the most important things is if we're going to be the ones acting dishonorably, then they have no reason to talk to us, and they can just hang up the phone or turn off the phones and just not listen to any more calls. But one of the other things that I think really gets the heat turned on is contacting their superiors and asking them, you know, like if they know what's going on with the inferior court. And you can contact like the administrative judge. For each judge, whatever if it's a town, a city, there's usually an administrative judge that oversees them, and then there's a chief judge for the state. So I don't know if we can get the name of the chief judge or his chamber's phone number to contact them and ask them if they know what's going on with this inferior court and if they're aware of what's happening with case number such and such. And also, there's a lot of other departments that I don't know if it would do us any good to contact. For just some of them, there's like Committee on Open Government, because one of the things that I don't think is that I've experienced is that if you call a place and you want to know, like I had this experience, friends and family called for me when I was in jail, and they just hung up on them, and there was no follow up. Except that I sent complaint forms, just a standard general complaint form to complain to their superiors to get them in trouble from their bosses, which I know doesn't really often work or do anything, but I think it's worth doing, like a follow up from a phone call. So it's not just a phone call, but it's a follow up to make sure that there's a lot of light shed on the situation from different agencies that investigate.
All right, we appreciate it. Those are a lot of good ideas. And again, you know, we're going to list all these ideas off. We'll get them onto the page. And we will. That's a good idea about trying to find out superiors of people. So we'll see if we can work that out. There's, you know, there's a leadership on this committee that runs the Courtroom Observers Group. And, you know, and I believe we have two leaders on this group, and we also have Carl, who is the overseer from the national end, to oversee the work and making sure that things are going and people, they're operating and doing what they need to do, or we'll find new leadership. Because sometimes we give leadership and then they don't do anything. So we need to make sure
right.
We have a leadership that's working. And they need to then start to mete out some of this work to others who will volunteer to try to help to get that kind of information on cases that we start to prepare. And we'll be working with that leadership from our end on the office and when we're writing this paper, and we'll kind of give them some insight of the upcoming cases and the information we have, and then they'll start to look for the other information that they'll need to give for this kind of thing or for calling their boss, so to speak, and or the boss, I guess, unless they're elected. In the case of this judge, by the way, I happen to know because I was reading on the website when I went to get the phone number and different information. These judges are elected, so they answer only to the people. But in the administrative thing, the fact that there is an administration And it is the judiciary. There is sort of an extra oversight on this, and so yeah, that does exist. And we'll see about getting that, getting someone to do that job. And then once we get to the point where the case finally does become ripe, and then we can kind of strip all that information from that section and put it onto the site and put out the call for action. So whenever we have a call to action, and you'll probably be seeing that a couple of times a week, we're going to try to do the calls of action through the we'll definitely make note of the calls of actions that are up and coming that coming week in our weekly newsletter. But we will put the call of action out as soon as it's ripe and we post it. The moment it's posted, the call to action will go out in the subject heading. We will put call to action, and we'll put the date probably. So if you got one the day before and you get one the next day, you'll know that it's two different cases up there. Okay.
Now, are we going to be contacting the district attorney on this as well?
No, the district attorney doesn't play a role per se in this, or they should be, because actually district attorney is supposed to be doing the right thing for the people, but they're really doing the right thing for the Bar Association.
Well, because district attorneys are also elected, right?
Well, yeah, I believe they are. The attorney general is also, and he's the head honcho of the state, and we notify him of everything we do. We also notify the district attorney of whatever we're doing in a case when we do a habeas corpus and what the conclusion is in the default. They all know what's going on. But, you know, that's a good idea to put their names down there. And, again, some people might want to call them and say, hey, yeah, how come you're not taking care of this case and doing the right thing and making sure the Constitution isn't applied here? What's going on?
Exactly, because they take an oath of office as well. And they're, like in this county that I'm in, the sheriff and the district attorney talk all the time. And so I think that the DA would be just as important as the sheriff because, like we were talking, most sheriffs nowadays, before they do anything, they contact the local, you know, attorney. They say, hey, am I allowed to do this? Or, you know, it's almost like they're just going to the bar members now for, you know, what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. But
well, that's a great idea. I think we should put that up, the information up, to call the district attorneys and say, hey, why aren't you DAing? You know, what's going on here? We should do the same thing with the state attorney general. There's only one per state, and that's definitely the state attorney general should be put up there because, look, they have been copied on every one of these cases. They already know what's going on. and now that they're violating the Constitution, state attorney general, you've been elected by the people to protect the people. What are you going to be doing about all this? You know?
Right, and a lot of the stuff we can do when we're talking with these people is to just keep it simple. You know, if they go on a tangent, just try and narrow them back down and say, hey, well, what's the point of government? Is it to protect the people or is it to abuse the people? You know, and didn't you take an oath of office? And if you read Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the Constitution, it says that this Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So if it's in conflict, if some other attorney or bar member is telling you that you're allowed to do this, if it's in conflict with the Constitution, it's null and void.
Amen.
So just keeping it simple and not going off on you know, legal tangent arguments about, you know, anything really in depth to confuse anyone.
Okay, great points. I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, let's go to the next caller. This is an unknown caller, another anonymous 617 area code. You've been unmuted.
Oh, hi, John. This is Cynthia from Massachusetts.
Cynthia from Massachusetts. How you doing? We're working on a case for you. Yes.
Oh, yeah. My heart is so troubled here. I mean, how worse can it get, an 82-year-old widow female? I mean, this is like, I can't quote biblical passages over the horror of this.
Right. Who are these people? I agree. You know, look, where is their compassion? Where is their empathy? It's all about money, greed, and power, and they're not paying attention to the people they're destroying.
Yes, well, I can just say from my own experience, because I'm going through a similar thing, similar tactics. I'm sure that's how they do things in other states. But I'm sure, as a man, you're aware what we're dealing with. We're dealing with some major criminals and we're dealing with Satanists, okay? And these systems, the gangsters, all right, they end up killing people to get what they want. I mean, I just can't stress. You have to get to a place where you're not afraid, you know, but
I agree 100% with what you're saying, but do you have any ideas, though, that you might want to throw into the bag?
Well, I'm premising this in such a way where, you know, it's taken a long time for these criminals to infiltrate our systems. There needs to be a lot of backing of, you know, our marshals and our sheriffs to make connections and to do their job. I mean, a lot of people are afraid to do their job. You know what I mean? I mean, I expect everybody to do their job, but there's like criminals in there in our system. So I just want to make that comment, and I don't know. You know, one thing I'm thinking about, and it's really up to the people, because I do a lot of exposure on Facebook. And, you know, what kind of helped my situation a little bit was an organization that tweeted my story all around, you know. What helps is exposure. I mean, we're going to call these places tomorrow and Friday, but I think these attorneys that are coming up with these little games need to be publicized. So what I'm thinking about, and maybe not in this situation because the other person has to feel comfortable, is to put their names down on my Facebook because I have an audience that listens to it. I also ask for, you know, people to pray because I think people even outside of NLA need to, I mean, how bad can it get to kick out an 82-year-old widow female? You know what I mean? So, I mean, I think even outside of NLA need to hear this story, you know? So that's my suggestion. I like to put it on, advertise it on for call for prayers and, you know, put down names, who to call on Facebook. It'll be outside of NLA, but that's something I really want people's permission on.
One of the things this may spark off an idea. A few people might want to jump onto this and kind of take control of it. And again, we're looking for people to come up and take leadership here. People that maybe say, "Hey, I got some skills to do that. Let me work with that," and you know, just spearhead the program. But look at, we have about 6,000. You know, we have emails to about 6,000 news media outlets. And if we can get someone to do a sort of a press release on a short press release on things we're doing, like what's going on here with Mort out in Long Island, and someone writes up a press release, Mort, Long Island, Hampton Bays, you know, 82-year-old woman being defrauded, thrown out of her home, fraud on the courts, you know, blah blah blah. Kind of write it up, and you can take we can share the affidavits, so you can get the facts exactly what's going on. Okay. If some people can get involved with this, take that information, write it up, give it to us, deliver it to us, and then we send that out on the email and blast it out to all of the
tomorrow. Just let me know where to send it to.
Look at you get a hold of me, call me on my phone number. If I don't answer because I'm not in, I'll keep an eye out for you.
Okay.
But if I don't answer, you'll get Linda probably because she picks up the phone after me. And then you let her know and get it to her and she will find me.
Okay, well, I need the mom's name. I was trying to look for it on NLA and I couldn't.
Look, we have her affidavit and her case on with a link on the court file on the where is it? Her case is in there and you can click on it. Look, your Facebook should be the same thing. You don't want to post a case on Facebook. What you want to do is you want to summarize it just like you would do for the press release. And then give a link to the page where the people can go and open up and read about it. Just tell a short story, like John said. Give a little bit about the case, some of the fraud they did, how they're getting her out, how they took it over, and they're trying to evict her like she's a tenant to avoid the legal process. and then say it's you can be found here, and you put the URL to that page
right.
that they can click on that link, and they can open her case up, because
exactly.
that'll give somebody who has some law background, or maybe even a state attorney, a federal attorney or something like this, Parit Bahar, can go and
right.
look at it and get all the facts right there. So you don't know where that's going to go. It's a very good
right.
thing. Put it on
now
the
what was her name? Maud what? Because I couldn't find
I
it.
I think it's Pollock. But we,
yeah, it's
John,
Pollock.
What's that page with her case on it?
Yeah, it's Call to Action. If you go to committees, highlight committees, and
mm-hmm.
you come down to courtroom observers committees and highlight that, it'll show up Call to Action. Click on Call
okay.
to Action, and you'll get all the information, the phone numbers. And we're going to put more information up there. And we're also going to get it, this page much better and more
mm-hmm.
interactive. We also have yeah. commentary on this page, so people can put commentary and put some ideas. Hey, when we call,
yeah.
why don't we say this or talk about
yeah.
that? Let's get some ideas. We're also,
well,
we'll pass this recording over to Linda, and Linda will, you know, kind of bring all the information out of here,
yeah.
this call tonight, and put it into some kind of an order where
right.
we can put bullet points and things
yeah.
to do generically on
yeah.
all the cases. And let's
yeah.
get active, people. Let's do it. Let's
yes.
take America back. It is time. It
I
is
have
time.
A hypothetical question, too. The other person kind of alluded to it. You guys are brilliant, okay? And I see what you're doing. I see the vision, and it's an awesome one. What we're dealing with is powerful forces and manpower. If hypothetically, if you put all of your energy on this Maud woman, because it's like I would think the whole country would rally around her. This is horrendous.
I agree.
Now,
we need someone
to
write
that,
something
to
tonight
me,
and get to us.
Right.
Are you able to write this? Are you able to write this up?
I said I was going to do it tomorrow morning. I'm going to call
okay.
you, too.
Okay? Well, yeah,
when
make sure.
I'm going to do it. But no,
yeah.
Let me just ask you.
I'm going to pass your number over to Linda, and I'm going to ask Linda to give you a call in the morning. And
Please.
What we'll do is then she can share the affidavit with you or any other information
okay.
so you can
cool.
get some really good detail. And I'll
okay.
tell you, you'll get a lot of good information on the paper that we wrote that's right up on the website. Click
okay.
on that PDF there. Okay,
awesome.
So I'll
All
pass
right.
over to her.
All right. Now, let me just ask you a quick question. Now, if this case got over, you, everybody put their heart and soul into this one case on the federal level. And if the judge determines summary process is unlawful, that would apply to all the summary process across the country, would it not?
Well, it would really help us. But look at all we have to do is get in our feet into one court case where,
right.
where it really works hardcore. Look, this opens a whole bunch of things for us. It's
yeah.
a chain reaction.
Right.
No, this is a nuclear reaction is what we're doing
mm-hmm.
here. We're going to go right from New York straight to California.
Right. Well, I can't think of anything more horrendous than this case. I mean, okay. All right, thank you. I'll look forward to hearing from her tomorrow.
Okay, I'll get your
number.
Well, I've got the number that you're calling in on right now. That's the
yes.
number I'll give her. So.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate
okay.
it. Okay, next, Ginger, 214. Go right ahead, Ginger. You got the mic.
Okay. First of all, my head is kind of reeling here so much. I think the first gentleman that had spoken about the federal district, I think he was alluding to perhaps it would be best if we knew what cases were in what federal districts, and then the states that were there could be more on a local level, could be handling it on the local level. So perhaps if we could divvy up the 105
cases. Well,
yeah,
we can do that. That's real
okay,
simple.
Good.
And also,
okay, great.
And
great.
We'll make that plain on the information of the case as we start doing it. It's a good idea. And
okay.
bear in mind, we'll always put some kind of a PDF paper on the case up. Maybe a paper we wrote or something on the case, and short and sweet kind of thing. And on
okay,
that,
good.
You'll
yeah.
see the federal district
will
be listed on that, too.
Okay, great. That was the first thing, because that'll carve it out. We've got to take it back into the local chunks here. Okay, then.
Yes, very good. Good idea.
Okay. Now, just some observations here. This call was a call to action to make phone calls, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Well, here's what I did. And by the way, I signed up as a jury administrator, and I'm 38% through my civics course.
Right.
So I'm committed. I'm in. I understand this. Here's one of my issues. Carl sent me an email for a call to action regarding a case in New Hampshire. I made the phone call, and then here's what I sent back to Carl following up with this case, spoke with the judge, and then I was speaking with the lady, and she said she didn't have any information as the file was in the court. This is my email. About that time, our coworker whispered, and then Betty informed me that two previous gentlemen from our office had called. She couldn't help, would have to speak to Brian's attorney or the county attorney. And then I asked, how do I proceed? Got nothing back, John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really don't like to respond and give information or anything. But bear in mind.
John, yeah? I got nothing back from Carl.
Oh, from Carl. Well, maybe he's been busy. When did you send it to him?
I sent him that day when I called, December the 2nd. I got the message December the 1st. And I've heard it. Wait. Hold on. I've heard this before. It's the follow-up. I do my job. And then I don't get any follow-up. There's a lag here. And so I'm just making this observation.
I agree. Look, let me just comment. I don't want to make an excuse for Carl or anybody else. So, but you're absolutely right. But probably the big problem is Carl is extremely busy on the one end, and he is the national coordinator.
That's why
he is supposed to be whipping.
Hold
on, he's supposed to be whipping the committee people, and I'm going to get all the two committee people that are running this committee, and they're the ones that need to have their name and their email, and they're the ones that got
to
respond.
It needs to be down to the local level.
Agreed.
You guys, so handle it. Get the guys going. Now, another thing, I'm from Texas. We just spoke the other night.
Uh-huh.
I look on the email, I look on the directory. The guys who are not supposed to be on there are still on there. I did not receive an email from you guys carving out precisely why I'm not supposed to be in bed with them anymore. I didn't receive that. Next, and this is my final thing. When I signed up, I saw that you could be a premier member and for $5 a month. I didn't want to do the $5 a month for PayPal. I wanted to do the $60 for the year. It was not available on the site. I sent you an email saying, I don't see it. I don't want my PayPal account done. So I
right.
said,
well, you can go to the Donate Now page and mail a money order or a check.
John, stop. Let me finish. So I ponied up $100. Then I never got, this is the only organization, John, I've ever sent any money to and not even got an acknowledgement then. So you sent another email out saying we need money. I coned up another $100. John, not one acknowledgement. Thank you, Ginge.
I understand that, and I do appreciate that. On the PayPal side, there's an automatic thing that I set up with a thank you. I wrote a personal note, so on and so forth. Well, that's only if you go through the PayPal, okay? If you send anything through the mail, that doesn't get – you see, I don't have a physical secretary, and there's a lot of things –
I'm telling you, I sent it through PayPal. I can send you –
Well, you should have went to a thank you page after that with a message that I wrote.
Okay. Well,
you didn't get there. You didn't get bounced over to a message page.
Precisely.
Okay. Well, then something went quirky in the system, and I'll fix that.
Okay. But, John, hold on. Here's my observation. I adore you. I adore what's going on. We need some pecking. We need some effective organization here that I expect to hear from, you know, from my Texas coordinator. And I never got a welcome note.
Look at this is up to the people to do this. And this is a problem that plagues every organization. Now, bear in mind, there are some national organizations that have sprung up very quickly, but they had money behind them. They had people actually working in an office doing things, and they can respond with the paperwork. We don't have that. I'm a one single guy here in Hyde Park doing what I'm doing here, and whatever comes through the mail on my end, I have to respond to a whole bunch of things. Forget about the.
I get that.
Also, we have mail that's coming in from the courts. We have stuff coming in also through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury down in Valhalla. Down in Westchester County, and that mail gets funneled up here, and again I respond to that, and I have no secretary in my office. So what I'm trying to say is this, though. This is what I'm trying to say. We are working day and night to try to also excite people to step up and take on the job. Say, I'd like to do this. Come up with ideas, or say, look at the things don't seem to be working here, and it looks like you lack leadership. How about I take and work with these people that are leaders, and let me help out and get my number up there. Let me be a leader in this committee also. Look at, we want people to do that. We want people to get involved. We need people to become administrators in their county. We need people's involvement. And if they don't do it,
won't even give a simple. If a simple thank you doesn't get through,
there's not enough time in a day. But I agree, if we can get the manpower to do that, we'll do it. But as far as most,
talk about it till the cows come home. But what's the resolution?
So, I just told you I'm going to need help.
Yeah,
I don't have the time. I don't have the time to do the work that I have to do. I literally am behind the eight ball 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I am always behind the eight ball. I just can't catch up. Okay? If someone wants to come out to Hyde Park, New York, and they want to put in 8 hours a day and do this paperwork, I'm all good for that, because then that'll free me up to do other things.
Well, then, you know what? You just, the little lady that just called, God bless your heart, it's the prayer. Then we'll speak that. We'll speak that whoever needs to be showing up will show up, because here's the glitches. I've 1-2-3-ed them. And so that's what we need. Then we'll speak that. We'll ask that. And in the name of Jesus, for goodness sakes, let's get this organization, the people in there that need to be in there, to help you, to free you up.
Absolutely. Look, we need three, maybe more, but at least 2-3 people in the office here and locally working together that can come together. But people have to have the money. They have to, they have homes, they got children, they got mouths to feed, you know, so we have to get money somewhere to be able to hire people.
Yeah, but God
people
provides.
who are committed and involved, I'm talking about, huh?
God provides. Now, let me tell you something. One of the reasons I signed on with you guys was because in 2009, I got the information from Leo D'Onofrio over there in New Jersey, who said that the grand jury is the fourth
branch.
He says
branch
it's
of
branch
yep.
of government. He withdrew because he was discouraged. Somebody get in touch with him. He would be in New Jersey. One of you New Jersey guys. Connect with.
If he's disgusted, then he should have fixed the problem. This is an active group of membership. Anybody, let me say this, and I'll say it on Monday. Anybody can become a leader of a committee, a leader of a group. They can work their way to wherever they want to work and fill in the gaps. We are looking constantly for people who have a management skill.
I don't want to talking over you, my darling. Somebody in New Jersey, that was in 2009, so he got discouraged. But now you guys are up and running. Somebody from New Jersey needs to call him and say, listen, Leo, we got a good, viable thing going on here. He might have a few coins that he can throw into the pot.
Do you have his name and number?
Well, I've got his name or the whatever, but as somebody he's in New Jersey. I want somebody from New Jersey to step up to the plate. Here's what needs to happen. Each state, we've all got relationships in our state. Texas, we've got a bunch of great people. I'm going to get connected with my Texas people and show them what's on the table here. And it's a viable thing. We can get justice, righteousness back in our court system. I'm going to do that in the state of Texas. I'm going to get with my relationships and say, guys, come on, pony up. Let's join. Let's get it going. So people in each state.
You're absolutely right. That's exactly what we all have to do. We do bring that message from time to time, but that's what we have to do. We do have a very, very active welcoming committee, which now not only when a member joins, when someone becomes a member with National Liberty Alliance,
they
get a
phone.
We have 12 or 13 committees. And when you put people in charge of committees, people say they're going to do it, and then they kind of fall asleep. And this is common. I happen to know, because I'm a manager, you have to massage the log. You have to keep the bumps moving, because if you don't, they just become bumps on a log and they don't move. I know that. But you see, you still need people to execute it. There's so many things going on, and we have to do all these things. Now, we had a welcoming committee, but it never became active. Robert Bristow finally took the reins of – he's one of the national leaders, and he took the reins of the welcoming committee. We're going to make it work, and he's making it work, and it's happening now. So we need people like Robert Bristow who will go out and pull up their sleeves and do the job and get it done. So what we did is we've got maybe close to a half a dozen, if not a half a dozen of national leaders. And we had a meeting recently, and I said to them, look, each one of you has got to take the horse by the tail or by the horns or whatever you call it. You know, you got to get out there and make things work. So if we've got six of you guys and if we got 12 committees, everybody should be responsible for two committees and do an oversight. And that's what we're working on now to make sure that we keep massaging the bumps, making the lumps, to make them work, to make them go. And if they can't perform all the necessary things that need to be done, let's find some help for them. Get three or four people doing it. If they're not doing their job, let's find someone else to take their place. But let's make it move. We're doing all these things. Look at, we're doing all these things. I think you should get a hold of Gary and maybe work out and get involved in helping us do this. We'll feed you the information, the phone calls, anybody you need to call, all the information you need. We're looking for a project manager.
I have spoken with Gary. I've spoken with Jan. I've spoken with... And that was one of my ideas on the fundraising, but neither here nor there.
Take the bull by the horn and say, hey, Gary, I want to do this. I'm going to spearhead it. Give me the information I need. Write up a plan. Look, it's as simple as this. And all these committees need to be doing this. And I told the leadership, the national leadership, let's get out there and let's get the papers written. Every committee leader needs to write up information about their committee, who they are, what they're doing, what their goals are. Okay, and how people can connect with them. And then we need to get it up on their pages. And anybody who wants to create a committee, all they have to do, if they got an idea, they have to do is write it up and put a plan together, get a hold of Gary and say, hey, I'd like to push this committee. Let's get the national leaders looking at it. Let's get a consensus on it and let's execute it. We need to be active. That's what we are. That's who we are. We got to keep going. We got to do everything we can. And every little thing helps to grow this process, to grow this movement, and get closer to the mark, which is we, the people in the courts. So,
correct.
Take the bull by the horn. Call Gary tomorrow,
write
a paper, and tell him this is what I want to do.
Absolutely. And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but here's my issue. The bums from, as you say, or the ones from Texas, they need to be off the site. They need to be off the NLA site.
I agree. Is Gary on the phone call today? I certainly hope he is. Gary, you here?
It's okay.
Hold on. I'm looking to see if he's here. Okay, he's not here. Jan, are you here?
It's okay. Here's the deal.
Can you make sure? Hold on a minute, Jen. Can you make sure that you get the message to Gary that he needs to get the names of the people that are problematic out there in Texas to remove them from the leadership role, because phone calls going to them is not going to be helpful. You know, she's absolutely right on that. Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Okay. Hey, let me just tell you something. Everything's going to be A-okay. Our country shall be restored to justice, to righteousness, no ifs, ands, or maybes. I'm so proud and for you guys, for everybody that's in the trenches. Hearing the names when they came on tonight, it was like, wow, it was so exciting. And I'm just so thrilled and just be comforted, know that everything's going to be A-okay. Chickens, we're all going to, the common law jurors shall be reestablished. Everything shall be back in order, according to God's law. Love you guys.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your words. I appreciate your ideas. And I agree 100% with you. I am convinced we're going to be successful. I am absolutely convinced. But,
thanks.
You know, time will show one way or another. By Lord's mercy, it'll happen.
Yay.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Ginger, we'll talk to you again soon. And look, if you want to get to help us with this, please write put an idea on paper, create a plan, get a hold of Gary, get it going through the national leadership, and then I'll get involved with it, and we'll execute what we can. Okay?
All right. Love ya.
Thank you. You too. Thank you, Ginger. Okay, next person, wireless caller, 9878.
Yes. Hi, this is Keith from Massachusetts.
How you doing, Keith?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. I just wanted to put input on the original thing, your point about calling the sheriffs and stuff like that. I don't mind giving a call, but I think, obviously it's an emotional issue. It got people worked up that this somebody elderly is getting kicked out. And I think a good way to promote that is getting a license for picketing outside the courthouse just to prosecute, these evildoers in the court.
They will never give you a permit to picket in front of the court. But
we do have the right to assemble. That's true. But
they won't allow you to do it in front of the court, and they'll make you go down the street or something. And yeah, we could do that. But you see, the best activity in a court is in the courtroom. And if you go in there, that's an intimidation to the judge. And the judge, whenever the courtroom is full, the judge does the right thing, or he doesn't make any decisions at all. And we're good with both of them. Okay, whether he doesn't make any decisions or he just does the right thing. So if we can fill the courthouse with observers every time a court case comes up, he's either going to not make any decisions or do the right thing. So
right.
That's the best way to do it. If you can get people to picket, well, forget the picket. Let's get them in a courtroom, you know?
Right, but how do you get people to even know that case is going on?
Well, look, at National Liberty Alliance is a pretty large group. We have almost 5,000 members. Not everybody's
the way we are. National Liberty Alliance, John. I mean, I've been with you a couple of years here. It's, I'm hoping for that common law.
It's difficult, because we got
but
so
I'm just
much.
Thinking, I mean, that promote us. I mean, we put a sign out there. I mean, and we just had a web page with that case on it. I mean, you can always make a redirectional link URL code, save the employee.
We try to do, if you got any ideas on how we can do these things, by all means, write it up and get a hold of Gary and let's have a hearing and consider how we can execute certain things. But bear in mind, we have so much work that's going on right now that's going to get us into the courts. Getting the public's attention is something that will happen all on its own, and we don't necessarily need just Joe Blow or this one or that one common law common citizen per se that has no knowledge or understanding of what we're doing now. later on when they see the activity and they flow in and they start to get excited about it and they say, yeah, and I'd like to get involved, then we can bring them to where they need to be. But you see, we do kind of draw a lot of people that are already in the courts. We draw a lot of people that have already been looking at the problem. They know that there's subversion going on against the United States of America from within. But we get people coming in that have court cases that have been abused, have been in jail for no reason at all, vindictive prosecutions. And these are the people, most of the people that we're getting with National Liberty Alliance. And actually, those are the people that are seasoned to some degree to get really involved. And those people you would think would be the most active, and generally speaking, they are, because they want to see the justice system back, and they already know the problem is there, and they want to save America. So, but, you know, we do have a lot of work to do. But I'm all for any good idea and starting groups to and committees to execute those ideas and figure out ways to get them stimulated and going.
So basically, the phone call is best idea right now. Without, and as far as picketing, not good because you're not allowed on there.
Yeah, that's a big problem, I think, because you're definitely not going to be able to do it in front of the court. But then, you know, being proactive, if that's where they're spending their time picketing, I think they get someone to do picketing. You got someone who really is involved. So I would rather try to use that energies to do some other things, preferably. It's going to be hard to get, you know, 10, 20, 30 people in a local area to picket. I think that's going to be difficult.
Well, I think if they, you know, neighbors of the person that was going through this, I mean, I think you'd get the people that are local picketing because it's an issue in their community.
So well, you're more than welcome to start a committee with it, and but you draw up a plan and submit it, and let's get the leadership looking at it, and we'll see how we might be able to execute it.
And about the common law grand jury, I mean, do they even take us seriously when we say that? You know, I mean,
we don't care. It doesn't matter. You see, it's an attitude. Okay, you have to have the right kind of an attitude. It's got to be humble. Okay, it's got to be meek. But you have to have the right attitude. Look, I know the nature of things to a certain degree, you know, spiritually or morally speaking. And I know darkness cannot survive in light. I know you know, when you bring justice into a place, that the law and order is going to be, you know, all these criminals are going to disappear. I know the power of the pen and to reveal the sins and to put it on their paper and put it in places where they can't erase it, where everyone can see. I know that power. I understand that power. I see that power. And that's what we're doing. That's the big job that we're doing. And these people are not sleeping at night. And every day they hear, there's these people again. They get something from us all the time. We're always on the fax machine, sending things out. And then, of course, with the cases, we're getting to them there on the federal levels. They're sick and tired of us. And we're letting them know we're coming and we're going to put you in jail. You know, the day's coming. And we just wrote that in the last paper we put together. Look, it's coming. We have the ear of marshals. We do have the ear of U.S. marshals. We do have the ear of sheriffs. We have the ear of some FBI agents. And they know what's going on. And when this is ripe, when things are ripe, mass arrests are going to take place. We're coming to get you. That's the message we're sending.
Hopefully we can do that.
There is a story in the Bible, okay, and it was the blowing of the trumpets on the walls of Jericho, God said, told the Israel people, okay, look at walk around the city and blow the horns. When you get around, blow the horns. And you can imagine the people in the city. It's a walled-in city. It's fortified. They probably had years of food in there. They can hold up for quite some time and so on and so forth. But you can imagine them every day hearing this and hearing the rumble of all these people, this huge number of people walking around the city and they'd be blowing the horns. And on the seventh day, they blew the horns and shouted, and the walls of Jericho fell. Look at that's the nature of the way things are, okay? We're blowing the horn. We're walking around the walls of Jericho. They're going to collapse, and we're going to come in. It's going to happen. It's just the nature of the way things work. As long as we're patient, we trust in the Lord, we keep going, we do the right things, and we keep putting their sins on paper because they are violating we the people. They are subverting against the United States of America, against the U.S. Constitution, and against we the people. And we'll let them know we know. And you can't erase it. So that's powerful. People need to really understand the power of that, because that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I got you, John, but I'm glad to see that we have the cases in. You have it up on the website so we can make a call. I mean, I would have done the New Hampshire when I got the email, but there was such a short notice that I didn't have time to.
Right. We're going to get ahead of this game because we have all the cases. We're going to start writing them and getting the information ready for the quote unquote billboard, which is, you know, the call to action page. And all people have to do is go up to the call to action page every Monday and see the latest thing and say, okay, I'm going to make this call on Tuesday. I'm going to call these people on Thursday and whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
And we're going to have that every Monday. You can go up there and take a look and see what you could do that week to help save America.
Yeah. And I just wanted to add a note that, you know, as far as, making a donation, I mean, and getting things back, I mean, we all join with the power of, you know what we can do for you. And I understand that nobody gets paid to do anything. We volunteer, and I try to volunteer on some stuff last year, and it's very hard to get through, and I don't make much being a single father. I mean, I'm actually behind rent this month, and have to.
Yeah, I understand. And look at,
when I can volunteer, and I don't expect anybody to thank me for anything. I just want to do my part as an American to try to get this country back again.
Nobody's
paid to do anything. We're all volunteering with the best of our hearts to try to do something. And if we can't do something and we don't get back something and something wrong, well, I apologize for anything like that because, you know, we're not professionals. We're just common people trying to do the best we can to get our country back.
All right, well, I appreciate that, and you're right. Look, if everyone just puts maybe an hour a weekend or even a half hour a weekend, maybe just even make the phone calls, and if possible, you know, donate $5 a month or more. That's if we're all doing that, we're going to do great. We're going to do fantastic because we all know that people need to go out and work, make a living. They need to feed their family. They're struggling. They got to spend time with their family. They spend time with the Lord. You know, you got to get even your own time for sanity. And we know that. We all have the same situation. So we appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate your work. So have a great night.
You too. Okay, I'm going to try to move it along a little quicker because it's getting late and we still have quite a few people on the line here. So I'm going to kind of keep everyone a little short and try to stay focused. Robert, you've been unmuted, 847 area code. You have any good ideas and thoughts to help work this? Because let's stay focused on where we need to be.
Yeah, I've just two quick thoughts. I'll try to make them real fast as I've been listening. One is, of course, we're talking about common law. And how it was, they're saying it's been revoked. And you did mention part of my thought that it is in the U.S. Constitution. It's referenced there. And, of course, I think the answer, you know, pulling it all together, is that they would have to do an amendment to the Constitution to rid us of the common law.
That's not possible.
It is impossible, which that answers the question. It will never go away.
That's right.
The other thought I was going to say, earlier you were saying use your first name only when you call. But if you're calling from your phone, they've got your phone number. They know who you are. And
well,
so I was going to say there is a way to block your number. Do you suggest that?
Yeah, go ahead. What is that, star something 68?
Well, it's different for cell phones than it is for landlines. So you need to look into it for your own phone.
Where would we go to find that? Just your block phone?
I would call your carrier and, you know, call your whoever it is.
Good
if it's T-Mobile
Good
or
idea.
Verizon.
Okay, so anybody who wants to block their phone, call your carrier and find out. It's probably star. I know some places like star 68 or something like that.
Yeah, or 76.
And that's a good idea. And,
yeah.
And, if, And, you know, and if gesture, look, at, they're not going to be writing your name down anyway. They're not going to be taking your phone number trying to figure out who you are. This is just people in an office answering the phone and then getting under stress because all the phone calls are coming in. And it, we're trying to shake the judge up so that he does the right thing. That's what we're all about, and that's what we're doing. So, but,
I don't think they're going to round us up.
No, they never will. Look, they know where I'm at. They've already been to my house a few times. We've sat down and talked quite a few times. I've talked with the FBI. You know, I've talked with the Treasury Department. They've been out to me. And, hey, you know, everything, you know, they don't need to try to come in here to spy to see what we're doing. We already send them copies of everything we do. Whatever we do, whatever we say, whatever we write, we send it to the FBI. On all 94 districts, we send it to the U.S. Marshals and we send it to the sheriffs. Law enforcement, they know everything we're doing. And
right.
We want them to know everything we're doing because if they do and they're Americans, they're going to be with us.
That's right. That's it. That's my questions.
Yeah, bottom line. So appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Robert.
All right. Have a good night.
You too. Okay, next caller, Crystal from Connecticut. Hello, Crystal. From Connecticut. Crystal from Connecticut. One more call. Maybe Crystal fell asleep or had to walk away from her phone. Crystal from Connecticut. It's a 203 number. You've been unmuted. Maybe it's the wrong name next to you. 203, you've been unmuted. Can you hear us? Okay. Going once, Crystal from Connecticut. Going twice, 203.
Hi.
Ooh, somebody came?
Yes.
Four ones at the end of that number. Is that Crystal?
Yes, it is.
Oh, we almost lost you. I was just ready to hit that button.
well, what was I saying? Oh, gosh, I threw it off. About the paper.
Yeah, any ideas or anything on
what
they want to do? Yeah.
Yes, first of all, like what I did, I went to the town clerk because I used to work in the assessors, and I got, you know, the mortgage release and all that. And all of our paperwork has mortgage release. I send that in. I also asked them the copies. I have the copies of all my mortgage release and my deeds. And then when they stamped it, I asked them the copy of the contract with the person, the company that they put on my mortgage, and I wanted a sworn affidavit.
Oh, you just asked for the impossible, I think, but go ahead.
Well, that's why I keep on sending the paperwork back. This was last week, 2 weeks ago, I put it in again. I asked for Mr. GE, the credit union, and then I asked for it was like a sworn affidavit. Because they sent me a letter for foreclosure again.
Right. Do you have a case with us filed?
Yes,
with,
I do.
Linda?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. But what I wrote, I did this in writing. I asked to speak to them located at the courthouse, and I wrote their address on it. And then I asked, I said I would like a sworn notarized affidavit from you for the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And then what I did, I said, and I have the proof that I have it, you know. And then I had it notarized, and I had it stamped and notarized, and I turned it in and put it in my document file.
Okay. All right, so you've got your whatever information necessary. You got that out to Linda? Or whoever's taking your intake?
Yes.
Okay.
And then they sent me another one, so I'm going to be going back to the court because I keep on filing. You know, I asked them, you know, the name, you know, and all the proof that they had, and I asked for a notarized. They would never send it back to me. You know?
Yeah, they won't. They won't swear to anything. So you're not going to get sworn statements from anybody.
The two times I went to court to represent, I went there myself because no attorney would represent me. I was thrown out. The first one was when I asked him, I said, am I a public servant of this court? And the judge said no. And the second one, I said, well, and I looked at the audience, I said, it's just my grand jury. He goes, no, he's the grand jury. I said, you just committed treason.
It's like, oh, they know. Love you, huh?
Yeah, and, yeah. So, you know, but again, when I asked, you know, for their names and stuff like that, because I said, again, this, like, it's the 14th I was supposed to go there. But now they got a paper for the 21st of December. And I also went to court today as a court observer. I've been going every day for different people. Mm-hmm. And I've been bringing people. Well, I went there today, and they wanted to put this person in jail for a car accident. And I said, did anybody die? He said, no, somebody got hurt real bad, and they had to get a hip operation or whatever. So I remember, like, sitting in the courtroom and stuff like that. When the judge, he was like, he was reading real fast, and, you know, you know this and this and that, and you know you can do this time. He was doing this to the one of the clients, I mean, the clients before the person I was there for. Well, anyways, what happened, when the judge read off the date of the accident and said, oh, you were this and that, the date was wrong. They lied about the date and everything. And so the attorney told him to sign the papers. He goes, the best deal I can give you is 1 or 2 years in jail. Maybe, he goes, you could get up to 6 years. And I said, he goes, I don't want to sign. I said, don't you sign. Don't, absolutely not, you know. And so then all of a sudden the attorney, which it was, he was shocked to see me because he would see me at the other court. And I was shocked to see this representing this person. And so he goes, well, you have to sign the paper. You have to sign the paper. And I said, why does he have to sign the paper? I said, he goes, that's right. I said, but the date he just gave was the wrong date. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So all of a sudden, we finally left. But the guy, the attorney, was so upset about him signing the paper. I said, if you signed those papers, they could arrest you because what the judge just said. I said, they have no grounds. And so today, this same attorney called him out 8 times, demanding him to come to his office. He got to sign the papers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I said, you know what? I said, he just jammed his own self up.
Right. Yeah, well, look, these people, they're just out of control, and they love to be able to do those kind of things, just settle these cases like that real quick and make sure they get some jail time, and they frighten people, they intimidate them. Yeah. All right, I got to move on because we still have more callers, and it's 11 o'clock, and we're going to be getting late. I never expected to go this long tonight, but I appreciate the call. Thank you, Crystal.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. I'm sorry, I hit the wrong button, I think. I don't know. Maud, can you get in line? Because you were next. Hit *6. Let me put Q&A back. I apologize for that. Maud, hit *6. Into the queue, Maud. *6. Anybody else can get in there, too. But Maud?
*6.
*6,
and
Maud.
And a 1 after that.
Oh, then a 1 after that, I guess, yeah. So it's *6 and then 1. Okay. I'm going to unmute Maud because she was next and she's been waiting a long time. Maud, are you unmuted? Can you?
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm here.
I hear you. Yep. Go right ahead, Maud. You got the mic.
Okay. First of all, I wanted to thank everybody for their caring and for their help in advance. So that's my first thing. Then, John, I do need to talk to you privately about the procedure because there are some things in the document that they submitted that said that I absolutely cannot hand in anything the court day. I have to only hand it in 3 days before.
Well, it's already been sent overnight to the court. It's been sent, 2 copies been sent to you overnight. And a copy overnight has been sent to the sheriff. Now, if you want to drop that off at the lawyer or give it to him in the court, whatever you want to do, or if there's people with you, maybe someone else will hand it to them for you. Or whatever you want to do. If you want to give it beforehand, go right ahead.
Maud is not handing it in. It's the common law grand jury. You can put whatever you want. It's coming from us, not from you. Just hand it in and blame it on us and tell them, this is from the Unified Common Law Grand Jury, not for me.
In the letter, it says that I cannot hand in anything once the court started.
Oh, well, then don't worry about it.
Don, you know, you're going to have to support me a little bit more.
I need
more guidance.
You don't have to do anything in the court. We've done it all for you. You can say that the grand jury is taking care of this case. I have been defrauded. I have not had my due process in court, and these people are not my landlord. This is my home, and if they were going to take this, if they've seized my home, why didn't the sheriff come out and seize it? Why didn't the Supreme Court give them a paper to take to the sheriff for a default judgment or whatever kind of a judgment and have the sheriff come out and seize my property? They didn't do it because they couldn't do it, and the sheriff refused to do it. That's why they didn't do it. So now they want to get this town court, and they want to pull this fraud, make them believe they're my landlord. They're not my landlord. They've stolen my property. I owe them no money. And the sheriff says he's not going to disobey the Constitution. So here we are, Judge. And the United States Supreme the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury has written papers. You've got a default judgment on these people to cease and desist. You've got an order in the court here, a mandamus for the grand jury that there's fraud going on. You've been informed. Now, I know that's a lot, but if you read the papers that I sent you, the two front pages really tell it all.
Mind at 82 years old to be in front of a judge. I've never been in front of a judge in my life.
Well, that's why we're going to try to get some people out there, and if we can have someone that can give a call to me to be a lead person to make sure that they can get out there and speak on behalf of Maud, please give us a call. Give me a call, 845-233-6560. You can call me right after this call, or you can call me tomorrow morning. And if I miss the call, Linda will get it, and she'll get the message to me, and I'll call you back. But Maud, we'll try to get someone out there to speak on your behalf, on our behalf, really, the grand jury. I'm going to send paper out tomorrow directly to the lawyer. Okay? I'll send that out. He'll have it from us. He'll have it Friday morning. Okay? I'll do an overnight to him. Tomorrow I'll get it in the mail.
Because
you don't have to hand nobody anything. It's done.
Okay, but the thing is that if you write to that lawyer, it has to include the documents that they submitted. That's what it says in those papers.
They can say whatever they want, but I did include the court papers that they submitted as evidence, and they'll get the same papers that we sent everyone else. And basically, we did an information to expose the fraud, and then we did a mandamus to order the court to abate at law because this is fraud, and they'll become part of that fraud.
Yeah, but that's what you said when they stole my house and sold it, John.
But
they never listened to you.
Well, hold it. They stole your house. That's true. Okay? But they haven't really physically taken it. They haven't been able to get the sheriff. And I think these phone calls are going to happen, and that's going to be helpful. And I'm going to call the sheriff tomorrow. Now that he's got the papers, I'll wait till the end of the day to make my call. But I'm going to call the sheriff, and I'm going to identify myself as the grand jury foreman and the author of the papers that came to him, and I want to discuss them concerning the fact that he needs to obey the law. You know, I just want to talk with the sheriff, and I'm going to talk with him about that, the fact that this is a fraud. And we'll see, maybe he'll even go out and do an arrest if he can get the guts up and if he can understand what's going on, okay? And that's the key. They don't know. These sheriffs don't really know that due process is violated when they do summary proceedings. Summary proceedings is not a court of law, okay? And if they can get that through their system, through their head, and understand it, then they can go out and start arresting people. Because they should and they would. But, you know, we're going to do the best we can. We're going to get as many people as we can. We're going to get as many phone calls as we can. We're going to put the pressure on them. And I feel pretty strong that the judge is going to be quite fearful of what's going down, and he's going to hopefully not make any decision.
Well, wasn't the whole point to get the judge reconsider so that we can finish our case?
Oh, no, look, we're going to do indictments is what we're going to do. And we're going to get, they have your property in paper because these are lawyers and they file the papers and they file fraudulent papers. We're going to go after them for that and reverse all that. That's going to take time. Listen very carefully. As long as the sheriff refuses to cast you out of that house, you'll not be put out of that house. Nobody can remove you from that house but the sheriff. And he promised he would obey the law. And we're going to explain the law to him. That paper explains the law to him. So even if the judge goes forward, now that sheriff has got to consider, is he going to become part of that conspiracy? You know, that's the question he's going to have to ask himself.
Do you want
so the
me
best
to
we
can
do
the,
is put the pressure.
The sheriff really assigned me to his sergeant who handles the foreclosures and evictions.
Okay.
Do you want me to go to him and explain to him what's going on?
Well, absolutely, if you can, definitely. What's his name?
I don't have it in my hand. I'm sitting in my living room, but...
Okay, when you get a chance, throw it on my Skype, and maybe when I call, I'll ask for him.
Okay.
Okay.
Can we speak just you and I? I need to speak to you and because I have to make notes. You know,
okay.
I mean, I need to know that I'm not going to be standing there alone in that courthouse. I'm 82 years old. I've never. And you know, the other thing is, I'm having a really hard time dealing with this idea that this lady's going to write an article about me. I'm someone in this community. It's very embarrassing, this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Well.
I mean,
if you don't want us to do that,
I don't know if they need to mention my name. I mean, you know, I have prestige here. Nobody knows what's been going on.
If you prefer us not doing, go ahead, Gerard.
That's the problem. Look, they should be embarrassed, not you. This is a fraud on you. And one of the things you have to do is you have to ask for help. And look, your neighbors are next. You're first, but they're next. And I think that people will understand that. I don't think you have to worry about losing your standing. If anything, your standing should go up in your community because of what you've done to fight the fraud. Look, you're at an age and where you shouldn't have to worry about this. You have a certain wisdom, and you should be in your golden years, ha-ha. But the fact that they have to attack you because they think that you're defenseless, look at your neighbors will look up to you when you stand up and you say, look, I'm Maude, and this is what they did to me. They came after me. They used fraud. Look, you don't have to do anything, Maude, because we're going to do it anyway. If you didn't call or you didn't do anything, they've already got paperwork. We already have many people that are calling the court, calling the sheriff. You really don't need to do anything. It's been done. The papers have been mailed. They've been sent overnight. They're going to get them. I mean, all you got to do is say, I object. And if they say, why, you say, because it's not my wish. That's it. Everything's in the paperwork, Your Honor. Everything's in the paperwork. That'll scare him more than anything, because the paperwork, if he actually reads the paperwork, what he's going to realize is he's going to go to jail if he keeps continuing. His line, he's going to be on the line, the judge and all those officials, because this is definite fraud. You know it is.
Well, it's been fraud from day one.
That's right. And look, they went to a town court to cover themselves. And the other, I think you should press the town.
Their actions prove the fraud. Exactly.
Right,
look, they had to go to an eviction in order to seize. Think about that.
Because how would they have done it otherwise?
Because if it was done lawfully, they would have just seized.
That's
they didn't
right.
seize.
They
and that's the
you
point I'm
going
to bring to the sheriff. Go ahead, John.
They made you into a tenant, and then they evicted you. That's a joke. That's a ruse. And somebody should call that local judge and say, look, they're using you as a Ponzi. They're gonna put this on you because they're afraid to do it, and they think you're a stupid lower court judge, Your Honor. You should throw this case out of the local court. They're using a local judge to evict. They're not even seizing. They're evicting. And let me tell you what. In New York, it's very hard to evict a tenant. You go in there and say, if you were really a tenant and you said, I'm 80-something years old and I'm trying, let's say you were renting and they were trying to evict you, and you went there and you said, well, I'm trying to get an apartment. You know what the judge will do? Okay, 45 days. Then you go back and you tell another story. Okay, 45 days. I know people, it took them over a year to evict them. New York has a reputation of finding for the tenants as opposed to the landlord when it comes to evictions.
Yeah, but that made me mostly in New York City, unfortunately. I don't know how it would be out in Long Island.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, no, I mean up here. I'm talking about outside of the city here. I don't know. In the city, you know, they're probably so corrupt that they're all in on the deal. I don't know.
But I know a friend of mine has been trying to evict somebody in her house, and she can't do it for years.
I rest my case.
But, I mean, am I going to go in there and say I'm 82 years old and look at them, they're trying to evict me?
They're trying to evict you, and you're the owner. And they got
well,
your house by
the
fraud. They tried to turn you into
Gerard.
A tenant by fraud. You're not a tenant. You're an owner. How can they evict an owner? And what are they doing down in this local court when you're up in the Supreme Court? And in the federal
court. That's the point you have to bring up. And this is, and try to keep it simple. Look at, if this was not fraud and it was a real case, why didn't they just seize the property when they claimed that it was theirs and have the sheriff come out and remove me? Why are they making me a tenant in my own property and calling themselves the landlord and coming to a town court to remove me? Why are they doing that? That's the ruse right there. And we've already wrote it up that way. That's what we wrote on the papers. And we called it that, a ruse. So, look, I'm going to talk with the sheriff tomorrow or the what did you say the other guy was? Was he a sergeant or something?
Sergeant.
Okay, get me the name and number. Throw it onto my Skype tonight or tomorrow morning, and I will call to talk with the sergeant.
I prepared all the documents to present to this sergeant, you know, including the set off and the copy.
No. Don't give me, he'll confuse him. It's way, way too much. We got to keep it simple. I did two simple pages and then supporting documents attached. And that's all they need. You give them any more than that, they're not going to understand any of this stuff. But they will understand the fraud. When you tell them, they'll understand. Look at. Listen, Sheriff or Sergeant.
They never, ever swore that I owed them anything.
Right, but here's the point. Look, when we talk to the sergeant and you talk to the sergeant, here is the point, okay? If they actually came and closed on my home in the Supreme Court, then why didn't they just do a seizure? Why do they have to go through all this exercise to go to a town to have me evicted from my own home when all they have to do is seize my home? You have to come out and take my home. But why didn't you do that? Why are you going to try to throw me out as a tenant? And therefore, that is the proof of the fraud, that they
They're
have to go through all those
hands.
Things.
What,
They're operating with dirty hands.
What do you?
They're operating with dirty hands. They're trying
to
clout and muck the work. Look at when that judge, I don't know who that judge is, but they might have chosen him because he's in their pocket too. I don't know. But when he knows that you know, somebody, the sheriff should be sent out to the judge job. And when that judge understands that whether he knows it or he doesn't, if he does know it and he knows that we know it, he's not going to go for it either way. He's not going to stick his neck on the line for this attorney or whoever
it is. Why don't we try to make the phone call tomorrow together, you, me, and we'll try to get Maud connected and we'll call him.
Yeah. I think he should know, and I think the local judge could stop it because they went to the local judge because obviously the state judge is unwilling to stick his neck out to finish the fraud that he started.
why don't we call up this sergeant tomorrow? We'll try to call him at maybe about 1 o'clock. We'll do it in the afternoon. That'll give time for the paperwork to have gotten there. And then let's get Maud on the phone, you,
okay.
me, and Maud, and we'll talk with this guy, and let's see where he's coming from. And let's suggest exactly that to do. You know, why don't you go over and talk to this judge concerning this fraud? As a matter of fact, look at, you guys need to do an arrest. We'll do the indictment. If we draw up an indictment, will you arrest him? That's the question to the we're not going to the prosecutor. We don't need the prosecutor. And we will call local people in to do the indictment.
Okay.
You know, that's what we'll offer him. And let's see what we could do with that. Okay, Maud?
Okay.
Okay, so let us talk tomorrow. I don't know, 10 o'clock or something like that, sort of a pre-conversation. We could talk a little bit. But
okay.
At 1 o'clock, roughly speaking, we'll be planning to go and call directly to the sergeant and speak with him.
Okay. All right.
Okay?
We're gonna call out for a prayer for you, Maud, for peace and tranquility, knowing that it's already done, that God has already taken care of this. And so we're going to thank him ahead of time for all the good work that he's doing for you. Okay?
Amen.
By the way, boys, I was at Paul's wake tonight. At Paul Infantino?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I went to the wake.
Oh, okay.
And it was, his dad is up. There was so much love. It was amazing what this man did for his friends. He mowed their lawns. He helped them fix their houses. He was everywhere. It was amazing. All the love that was in that room for that man.
Mm.
So we've lost a treasure.
Absolutely. I agree. You know, I've never personally met Paul, but I've had a lot of conversations on the phone.
I know.
Goodness, he called me often, and we spoke often. And, of course, we spoke on Mondays, too. So
right.
He's definitely missed. Appreciate it.
Yes, yes. He was only 49 years old, John.
Oh, my goodness. He was a young guy.
He was.
Wow.
And apparently he had been having heartburn all the time he was in Florida.
Mm.
So it was coming.
Yeah, the heart will get you real quick. You know, you got to catch it. As soon as you're starting to feel a little funny, you need to get to the doctor on that.
Yes.
And push the tests. So, okay, Maud, let us move on.
John, I have a mass tomorrow at 10:30 for Paul.
Okay, yes. Okay, when are they burying him, do you know?
I don't know.
It's at 10:30. All right, let's try to talk after, okay?
Can we talk before? Because
we can talk before. Call
I'm
me at 9, 9:30.
Okay.
Gerard, when we close down tonight, I want to talk to you on Skype personally for a moment or two, right?
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much, John.
Okay, thank you.
And all those other people who have listened in.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good night.
Can I hang up now, or should
sure.
I stay listening?
No, you can go to bed. If you need to get to sleep because you've got things going tomorrow, it's late.
Okay. All right,
thank
you too. You need to go to sleep too.
Okay, thank you.
I hope you had a good luncheon.
Yes, I did. It was very good. Thank you.
Good.
Okay, all right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's take next caller. We're only going to take a couple of more. We've got quite a few people in the queue, but it's really running late, and I never anticipated this long, so we're only going to take a few more people, and then we'll pick this up on Monday concerning what we're doing here with this plan for a call to action. It looks like Tanner from Oklahoma, you got the mic. Tanner, you've been unmuted.
Hey, John, how are you doing? Can you hear me?
Good. I can hear you. Good.
All right. Well, one thing real quick. That Facebook stuff that we got together on didn't work, so I don't know if I got it wrong. So whenever you get a chance.
The Facebook that we had some problems on, someone else reported it. It is our site. So if you were given the keys access, right? Gary gave you access?
And that didn't work? I the one that you gave me login and password, and that did not work.
Okay, talk with Gary because he's got it also, and work it out with him, and I'll double-check. If he needs it, he can call me, but he should have it too, and I'll double-check mine if he doesn't, if he can't get in. But that's it. We have two sites, I don't actually go out there to spend any time on it because I don't even know how Facebook works, to be honest with you. And I'm just too busy. But we do have Gary out there, and we have Chris from Queens that takes care of it. And Chris from Queens also started another site, so we got two of them. And he started it a long time ago. But I don't know.
So that may be the other one. The other three people were on. But anyways,
Chris's number, and you can give Chris a call, and you can talk with him and tell him who you are. And matter of fact, I'll try to give Chris a call too.
Okay. So, do you want to do that via Skype or whatever?
Yeah, let's try Skype tomorrow. We'll try it tomorrow afternoon or something, you know?
Okay, we'll do. On the point, the topic, seems like we have the purpose, one, of letting everyone know that's involved, that the people are aware across the United States of what's going on and putting the pressure on. But wouldn't there be another part of that, like with the sheriff, where we should be specific in direction that we're giving? Like, this is what we want you to do, and this is what we're telling you to do. So, like, we tell a judge, hey, we're aware that you have this issue going on, and we want you to do the right thing. And then with the sheriff, you had the same thing, or other parties. I'm just saying, shouldn't there be a difference between parties that we are letting them know that we're watching, and then other parties that are involved that we're saying, hey, we're the common law grand jury, and we're needing this specific action?
Well, yeah, and bear in mind, this sheriff does have a copy of everything in this case. And it could be told to him that, look, the fraud is clear. It's in the case. Read the affidavit. They have not rebutted that affidavit. Read the fact that that they've defaulted and it's been filed in the federal court that default took place. Read that. See the fact that they're doing this ruse. Why didn't they have you seize the property? After all, they claim that they own the property now and they foreclosed on her. How come she isn't being evicted for seizure? How come you're not seizing the property and evicting her from a home because she doesn't own it no more? How come it didn't happen that way? Why did they have to go to a town court and play the landlord game to do this? Are you going to participate with this? This is the kind of thing. The sheriff has all this information, but I don't know that they can interpret it, and that's the big thing.
Go ahead.
I just want to say what Tanner's asking, and we're going to do this, I'm sure, in each case that we do a call-out for, we'll give, if there's something specific that needs to be targeted or that we want to ask, we will put it up there and we will tell them, the people. And though, like you said, each case is a little different. Each person you talk to, you might have to say one thing to the judge, another thing to the sheriff. I made the suggestion that we rate the sheriff as a friendly sheriff, as a non-friendly sheriff, 1, 2, 3, so that people know when they get on the phone what kind of things they need to say to him. And we need to develop that as we go along here. But, yes, the short answer is we're going to give more information if it's pertinent on a case where you should, say this in this case, say that. We may even, it might not be a bad idea to put a two-sentence little skit in there for people that don't feel comfortable,
Right, because it's like McDonald's. I mean, hate them or love them, they make it so easy anyone should be able to do it, even though they still get it wrong.
Yeah, and we'll do that. And like I said, maybe even have a suggested dialogue that they could work off of, put it in their own words or whatever. And look, anybody else that can think of it on a case, they should submit that. Everybody should be helping on this.
Right. So not only just for this case, but every case, like a one or two liner, these are the two points that need to be said. If you strike up a conversation, great, but this guy needs to be told, we want this done with authority. We're telling them to do it in a humble, meek way. And then this guy, we need to tell him, look, we're watching you, and we know exactly what you're up to, and this is what it is.
And you're absolutely right, and that should be said at the front of the conversation, because if you do get a conversation going, you don't want to miss the point that we wanted them call to be made to begin with, like the main point that you're calling. And then if you
right,
go
what's
off
going on?
That making conversation, that's fine. But bring those right. points out that the call out went for. Call this guy, this is what's going on. Call that guy, say this. And then you can take it from there. I mean, some of them are going to hang up right after that. Some of them will want to talk. You got to use your own judgment.
Right. Okay. Well, out of respect, when I call people, I try to get to the point first if it's business, because people's time is valuable, whether I like them or not, and then I can move on. But I don't want to start off on my personal life or my birth certificate issues or whatever I've learned and then lose the point. I'll say what I need to say because I'm a member of the Unified Oklahoma Common Law Grand Jury, and I have something I need to tell you, and this is what it is. Now, after right. that, they can respond, hang up, hate me, love me, I don't care.
Right.
We move on, and then we do what we need to do. That way, because I get in a lot of interesting conversations with our members, and I love them when I have time, but a lot of times it's, unnecessary, and I don't have the time, and I'm sure a lot of other people feel the same way, just overloaded with stuff to do. So I'm just suggesting something very, very simple and very, very easy. That way no one's intimidated if they don't feel like they have anything to say. And then other people that have too much to say can at least get the point out first, and then it could go from there. That way we're effective when we communicate and not hung up on as much. But anyways, I was just throwing that out there.
Yeah, and
good,
listen, those public officials will appreciate it if we only give them two sentences up front. By the time they get the 99th call, they're going to get it. And all they need to do is know how many people call. That's the main point, okay?
Right. And besides the bombardment of there's a lot of people watching you type phone calls, shouldn't we have an authority like the grand jury administrator or the foreman making the demands? It doesn't necessarily have to be John or you, but instead, like, we don't need 50 different leaders making a command. Shouldn't it be a one unified thing? Here's our decision, and you need to do this. Here's the action to take. I'm the representative on this case. And
well, like John said, it's in the paperwork. And then you just
yeah,
got to ask them if they're
and we're
paperwork.
Also going to make that phone call to that, in this case, the sergeant, because the sheriff suggested work the case through the sergeant. So we'll work it through the sergeant to Mord. So we'll go to the sergeant. We'll talk to him. We're going to definitely talk to him from authority, but humbly. And I'm
right.
going to tell him my full name and that I'm going to let him know that normally I don't tell anybody that. But, after all, you're with the sheriff's department. I have nothing to fear with you, But in any event, I think we should do the same thing with the court, Gerard, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to make those phone calls as the foreman and with the victim.
Can you do that on every case is kind of what I'm getting at.
Well, look, if I can't do it, someone else could do it. I don't have to be the foreman, and I don't have to be the lead administrator. All we do is
right.
we need someone that has the ability to do it. They can articulate themselves. They understand what needs to be done and how to talk with them. And so anybody that wants to volunteer for that, and absolutely, it should be done in every case. I agree with you. Someone from an authoritative point calling to really get down to the conversation and really to the nuts and bolts and get to the point in a way a little different
people.
Than everyone else.
And it would be nice if they come from the state that they're calling from, too, because they're going to
nail
you in that.
Nice. And again, this is all where we have to train people, and they have to look at. Here's the thing. If people are going to do these jobs, and they have to learn to do it, and in order to learn to do it, you have to get involved and get active. We have other courses that we're putting together. And then when people get experience through, trying to learn things and listening in when other people are doing it, and then finally doing it themselves, then they'll be off on their own and doing it. That's what we need to do.
Well,
is getting people independent.
Well, our state coordinators, where they are applicable, and like in my case, I couldn't be my own foreman for my case, for example, but in most cases, the state coordinator should already be involved in all the classes enough to be that direct.
Yeah, but the state coordinators may not be running for administrator. Remember that. Okay?
Right.
And it's the people who are serious to become the administrators. When you get someone that's active, that is becoming an administrator and is going through the courses, then if they have the skills, that's another thing. They need the certain management skills and articulate skills. And anybody that fits that mold should just step up and do it.
One other quick point here before I let you move on. So are we going to have case number or something to identify to make sure that when they're getting bombarded, they know exactly what we're talking about and not just one of the multiple frauds that are going on?
Yeah, we have a federal case number, and it's 1776 hyphen 1779, 89 hyphen 2015. So it's the 1776, 1789, 2015.
But I mean, like you said, they might not even understand our paperwork clearly. When the people or the masses are calling, shouldn't we have some pertinent information with those one or two lines?
Yeah, we don't have their case number because they never gave it to Maud. She sent me the paperwork. They were so quick, they didn't even have the clerk's signature on it yet. Okay? They wanted this case to happen Monday. They got the paperwork out, even without the numbers. And so they moved very quickly.
Well,
so we don't
have
that
We do have her name and address, and that should be
enough.
Yeah,
and the time of the court case.
Right,
and
the time of the court case. That's always going to be posted, Tanner.
Right.
There'll always be a case posted, and it'll have an index number if we have one, but it'll have the name of the plaintiff, you know, and even the judge, and like he said, the time of the case. They'll know, by the third or fourth person, they'll really know.
And what I'm going to do, tomorrow is I'm going to write a basic introduction of what we're doing, and on the page, right on the top. And then lead right down and get more specific to the details of the case. But before I get to that, underneath that, we'll have bullets. Again, I'm going to talk with Linda and see if she can't transcribe this into bullets. And so of all the good ideas that we've had, and then run those bullets of ideas, maybe put them in a category and so on and so forth, and get them listed out there. And then below that will be the active cases for the week for phone calls.
No. I did lie to you. There's one other point, then I'll let you go. I get bombarded with emails from all the different committees and everything like that, which I don't mind. It's just that I miss the most important ones sometimes in the mix of things because I think I've already got the courtroom observer one or whatever it is. So just something to think about. If there's any way we can keep things from looking like other things or being redundant. So I don't need to get the email from the...
What we need to do, here's what we should be doing, and I'll make sure it does happen this way, but still a little unorganized in this, but we have the newsletter. And the newsletter, each committee is to report to Jan, who's running the newsletter, and put in any pertinent information concerning what they're doing, if they're meeting. And if they're meeting every week from certain time to certain time, then that should be in a newsletter, and that should be sufficient. So we're just sending out one newsletter a week to the people. They get the update of whatever's going on, what's going to be happening on the next Monday night meeting, if we have speakers and who's speaking, and maybe a little bit about what they're going to be talking about or what subject matter it is, and a reminder of the calendar for the week. Here's the meetings coming up for this, that, or the other thing. And then I think the only other emails that should be going out ultimately should be emails that are the call to action emails. That should be like a blast whenever it's necessary. But that also,
so
the call to action should also be on the newsletter.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could have a list of four names of the next four cases we're going to call on. Just a reminder, go back in your email, check the call to action.
Right. Well, I think what we'll do is every Monday we'll have one, two, or maybe at most three cases that we'll be working on for the week. And I'll try to keep it down to two maybe. And those are the two calls. And we'll say this, cease calling on this day or this time on this person, cease calling this day or this time on that person. So if nobody should call after Thursday for this person, something like that, because it's too, we've accomplished the goal up until that time. But as soon as that Thursday comes, if it ends on Wednesday, then that Thursday we'll pull that off, and we'll pull the other one off whenever that you know, time window, you know, expires. And then the following Monday, which we'll do it over the weekend, we'll post for the Monday, the new week. So every week we'll be posting. Everybody should know. Every week we'll be posting the new work to be done that week.
On the newsletter, we should be able to reference two phone calls we were to make at least once within that week, and then know that next week they will be the same.
Correct. Two phone calls, maybe one or two phone calls per case, okay? Because remember, in most cases, we not just only want to call a particular individual like a judge or whoever is the focus of the pressure, but we also want to call the sheriff usually. But not necessarily if it's the federal cases. I don't know how much we want to push on to the marshal, but maybe we should call the marshal. But we'll think about that.
But realistically, you're asking from 4 to 6 phone calls in a week. Each week, we should expect to see it in the newsletter, reference the call to action email with that name on it. Hey, Mr.
Right.
So-and-so, just we'll let you know we're watching this, blah, 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 hang up, 4 more phone calls.
Yeah, and I think it is more reasonable to say 2 to 4 calls, not 4 to 6. 2 to 4, I doubt it'll be more than 4.
Right. For both cases each week. Total
right.
would be
yeah. Well, it's two in each case.
Right.
In some
right.
cases, may just be a one.
So this is something anybody could handle. That's all.
And they only have to spend 5-10 minutes, you know, to get it done. I mean, to pick up the sit down, pick up the phone, may dial, get someone on the phone, speak for a minute or two, and you're done.
Yeah. Just leaving a message saying, I want to let you know we're watching about this, blah, blah, blah. Get the point out.
Yeah, and everybody should always say, you know, give them first name. Hey, my name is John. I'm with the Utah Common Law Unified Utah Common Law Grand Jury or the Unified New Jersey Common Law Grand Jury, whatever it is. I'm with that grand jury, and we're united with the other 49 states and all partnered into, or however you want to put it, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and we'll call in to make sure that you keep the law and give people due process, or whatever the case may be. And that could be left on a machine, too, if you have to.
Right. A good word might be agreeance. We're in agreeance with. I don't know. All right, guys. I appreciate it. I'll yield.
Right. So if they get tired of the calls and they turn on a machine, leave the message on the machine. Okay,
also,
thank you.
Just real quick, in the information, you do give the information as far as relating to the Supreme Court of New York County of Suffolk's index number 12-3259 statutory. So that's a number. If they really don't know what you're talking about, there's their number. It's in the information.
So in the spiel, whether it be the message spiel or in person, that should be one of the first things we say with their name and who we're with.
Right. I mean, you could use that or you could use the name, but that way there they know what case you're talking about.
Okay, let's move on. Thanks a lot, Tana. Appreciate your
Thanks,
time. I think we're going to make this the last caller. I want to talk with Fred from California, Fred Johnson. Go right ahead, Fred. You should have been on the
Hey, John. Good evening. Been
Great.
On the call since it started.
Great.
Do you have any information for me? And then if you do, I'll share some stuff with you.
Yeah, I don't have anything particular yet, but, hopefully we'll have more good news maybe on the next meeting that we're going to have, the private meeting for the people who have the cases. And again, you know, in your case, because they've been in jail so long and it's going to be this is probably going to be the biggest battle we're going to be fighting here.
Sure.
We do want to get all our P's and Q's together, you know, get everything in order. And I really want to get, like I said, this paper that we're trying to get out this week and the next paper next week. Once those two, I think your case is the next one to really put high pressure on.
Okay. Hi. Again, I spent the evening with you in hopes that we'd find out something. I don't mind waiting, and here's the reason I don't mind, because we're capable. My son's as capable as you of doing his case, and better more, because he knows his case better than you do. And,
right.
and Scott, likewise. So I'm not demeaned by the fact that you haven't gotten anything for me, but Let me just share something
with
you.
Well, bear in mind, our position is all about jurisdiction. It never had it.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was a fraud.
Yeah. See, he knows that, and we know that, and we've been fighting on that basis from day one. And let me give you some example, so you know that it's not our first rodeo. We have dozens, literally dozens of mods that we're responsible for that are in the judicial system somewhere, somehow, but still in their houses. Because what we've learned to do and what works is you beat them with their own stick, because fraudulent jurisdictions and fraudulent judiciaries give their cloud up. They only can threaten. They are the dog with the big bark, but they don't have any bite once you fight them. But ignorance, if there's a case in front of Maud, has the same evidence, the same everything about it, and they don't know what they're doing. They're out on the street. Maud comes in, and they don't do anything with her because they can't. And then somebody comes in right after Maud and is ignorant, and they go out on the street. It's incident by incident, case by case. And I can very simply put it, if there's anybody still on the line, that there's only the Constitution.
We still got quite a few people on the line.
The Constitution only allows for two courts. Two courts. If you believe the Constitution, you believe that factual statement, then we have a criminal court and we have a civil court. Let me ask you something, and it's very pedantic, but it's very factual. If you get a traffic ticket for breaking radar, exceeding the speed, the statute that says you have to go X amount of miles an hour, and you get a traffic ticket, what court do you go to? Do you go to a civil court? Or do you go to a criminal court?
Well, first off, under common law, there is no difference between the two. There's only one court.
But that's not my point.
Right,
because the judiciary needed something to make that particular fraud work. They invented the traffic court.
Right, exactly. 100 years ago,
there was no traffic court.
Right, I understand
but
that.
But the reason they have a traffic court because it perpetuates the fraud. That's where they collect their money. So if you know right from the outset that the court itself is a fraud, how many millions of people a day go through the traffic court and put some money down and say, okay, I won't do that again, go out and do it again, go back to the same court and pay the money again? Because they are duped by the court system. There is no such thing in law. Like you said, common law, there's only a court. If you split it up criminal, that's doing time. And if you're civil, that's paying funny fines. Then you have the two. Where the hell does traffic court come in at it? So people don't seem to understand that. And like I said, we have dozens of clients that have been in their houses 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years that have not paid a dime. They can't sell the house. They can't give the house away, but they don't have to move because the court itself is corrupt. And I applaud
you,
John. Well,
absolutely. Look, here's the bottom line on all the courts. They're all chancery courts, and they're controlled by the corporate charter of whatever the court is. If it's a town court, it's a town corporate charter. If it's a state court, it's a state corporate charter. County court, county corporate charter. And I'm sorry to say the federal corporate charter. You know, it's the corporation that is veiled over the true trust that is really the government that we have, but they put this veil over it, and it's the corporate veil, and they're operating under corporate charter. And every single court in America, it seems, operating under chancery.
Exactly.
So, that's where we're at.
That's my point exactly. I applaud you for what you're doing and what you're attempting to do, and that I know with my heart of hearts, the Lord has given me peace about my conviction that you're a man of God and that you're going to do something with the Spirit of God of God and ask for wisdom, and wisdom he gives up liberally and upbraiding it and not upbraiding it and gives it to you. But the bottom line is this thing is immense. And you listen to Maud for a half hour on there, and you say, why has this 82-year-old lady got to go through this burden? Because they, and I say it, and I don't say it arrogantly, whenever you talk about the court system, the constabulary, the government, and you put the first word is why, the answer always, and that's very grandiose, always, because they can. And if they can get away with it with you, and they can get away with the next guy, and they get away with the next guy, and then one guy walks into the courtroom, my son on many, many instances walked into a traffic court with a shopping bag, with a Black's Law Dictionary and a motor vehicle code, and the court's just running around buzzing with all these fines and times and fees and so on. And my son sits down and opens his shopping bag and pulls his books out, and the bailiff slaps his head and goes, oh, my God. And all that mechanism stops. That mechanism stops because his first question is, I'm here, Judge, not Your Honor. I'm here, Judge. Are you a judge with the criminal court? Are you here with a civil court? And the judge immediately knows what's happening. He pulls his finger down from his nose and says, and then the next question is, how long have you been a judge? Or are you a commissioner? They've gotten so brazen, they don't even have a sworn judge. Most of the time, they have a commissioner. Mm-hmm. He don't have any jurisdiction. So you can say, but you know what? When you're done that proceedings, you're going across to the jail because they operate those too, because they're not going to let you go home, because on the way in, that judge, in his preamble, he hasn't sat down yet, starts to say, if you want to leave here today, we're going to have to amend some of the things in the Constitution, and you're going to have to give up some of your rights. He says that on his preamble. So that's where people really are. And there's so few. If you put you and me and the guy that's on the phone with you, Greg, I guess it is, in a room with 2,000 people, the only people we can talk to is each other. Because the rest of them don't give a damn. Pass me a beer and let me see the football games on. You know, that's what I'm really concerned about. So, I don't want to get a soapbox. I've done this for years and years and years. I'm hoping that you're going to have some news for me. If you don't, that's okay. We're going to make it. Not to worry.
Well, again, the news that I'll have when the time comes is that we're moving forward with the pressure, and then we're moving forward with the indictment. But again, we want to be careful as we move forward towards indictment, because we want to make sure we prime the pumps so that they'll start to take. And once they start taking in one or two places, we're going to be able to do it a lot more liberally anywhere and not worry too much about their rejection, because if they reject it, then the system failed in that district, and we'll move over to the other one where it works.
And to avoid confusion, John, I need to tell you this. The enemy takes a seed of confusion and grows a big bush out of it. Maybe you guys can say, here's what we're going to do, and here's how you have to do it. Put a little note together. You have that email system that's so thorough, and say, here's a track to run on. Here's the dialogue. And here's if they say this, you say that, and so on. And then you can have a Maud feel confident that what she's saying is the right thing, and she's not stepping on somebody else's toes, or that she's not playing it by shooting by the hip, because she's doing what is already working. And I think, you know, that's my suggestion to you, because if you gave me a bunch of phone numbers to call, I've told you this time and time and time again, I got nothing but time. I can do it all day long.
Well, you're perfect for the program of writing.
Well,
right,
you've told me that half a dozen times. I never got a thing from you. I called.
Look at, you know, I can't do everything, as you know. So.
Here it is.
I took the bull by the horns on this to start off the movement, the real movement of the the courtroom observers group. Now, we've been active to some degree, but we really haven't really been active. Now it's time to get real active. And we're taking the opportunity of 105 people that have cases in the courts, and they're going to need phone calls for themselves, so they need to step up to the bat. So right off the bat, we should have 105 callers. Right off the bat. plus we should have at least another 50 to 150 callers just from our membership alone. We should have a couple of 100 to 300 calls going in on each and every one of these cases. And if this kind of activity goes on, they're going to collapse real quick. They're not going to be able to uphold to 300 calls or 200 calls or even 100 calls, and the people saying, I'm from Texas, I'm from Florida, I'm from New Jersey, I'm from New York, I'm right here in Long Island, I'm over here in Alabama, I'm calling from the Dakotas. You know, this is what's going to rock their boat and shake their train.
My point again, John, is that you're the bottleneck, and that's I had a business. I had a business in Texas where every the beginning of the year, getting ready for April 15th, things would get in, and the government can say, pay on time, you're going to be fine. And we would just put in extensions and go do them and do the taxes. And if there was a fine, it was minuscule, even if you owed a lot of taxes, et cetera, because they didn't believe the government saying, you know, what the government pipes out and what the government does. But you've got to educate people. You've got to, it's a continuous education. And when you hang up the phone, I'm sure Maud is as confused now as she was when she first called you tonight. I'm certain of that. But that
well, that's why we're going to be talking.
But you
can
use a guy like me to call them and help them. And, you know, I'm only saying that because I got the time. There was a time in my life I wouldn't have typed away on this phone call for 3 hours. But I have the time now. And the bottom line is, if somebody would send me some information, who you want to call, what needs to be said, put the dialogue together. I could even write it if it's necessary. But I'd be glad to run with your horse. But the bottom line is nobody. Manya says, John's going to be better now because he's got a Linda. Okay. It didn't affect me. I'm glad you got a Linda.
Well, why don't you step up and do it? You know, look at all you have to do is step up, write a program, write a plan, bring it to Gary. Gary will bring it to the leadership. Eventually, we'll be part of it, and we'll all look at it. We'll pull you together and say, okay, let's execute this, and we'll put you at the spearhead to make sure it happens. We need – this is the kind of leadership we need. Now, look, you're absolutely right. I just want to finish and respond a little bit, though. You're absolutely right that I am the bottleneck. But remember, every office is a bottleneck. That's why they call it an office. It's a tiny little hole. And there's only so much you can do in the office in a day, and you try to push as much out as you can. You push and you push and you push and you push, but then you know look at, we need to expand. We need to become a McDonald's. You know, we need to duplicate ourselves, and that's what we're working hard to do. And it's a tough thing because we're all volunteers. Nobody's got full time in here, and nobody's really educated in the common law. They're learning a little here and there. We're growing slowly. But look, it's the tortoise and the hare, and the patient, the one that takes the time, is the one that succeeds.
Yeah, but Scott and Kurt did exactly what you're doing in another realm, in the realm of you got a note, and the note is expunged, and the note is monetized, and so on. He showed people, those hundreds of people that I talked about, are benefiting by what Kurt and Scott done. But where are Kurt and Scott? They're in the can because they, whenever the neck was on the line, they put their neck out there and they helped other people. But the bottom line, the government saw fit to corruptly bring charges. The whole thing that they've done from the outset, from the indictment to this day, has been corrupt. And we haven't been able to turn it around. Now, who's going to give my son back these 10 years? Who's going to give Scott back his 10 and a half years? And all of the stuff that they did. How about the millions and millions of dollars that they would have earned doing things in the right way? That's a loss. But we take our loss only because we know the Lord. And I say that again, and I want you to hear me when I say that, because there's no animosity in me whatsoever. If we didn't know the Lord, we'd be a whole lot different people. But my son is grown in the Lord. He didn't go to prison and find the Lord. He went to the Lord and brought the Lord with him to prison. Scott didn't go to prison to find the Lord. He went to prison with the Lord. And they have not changed one iota. If anything, they've grown in confidence, knowing that Isaiah 54:17 is a for real thing in our lives. God, there's no weapon formed against us is going to prosper. And when this thing is turned around, God's going to take our humble spirits and put us on a pedestal, which nobody can knock low. And the bottom line is, that you got to do it one client at a time. If you try to do the massive, again, it'll choke you. So if there's something you could send me, if there's some phone numbers you need me to call, I'll be glad to put a program together and show you what my kids did. But the bottom line is we got to help the mods. We really
Absolutely. We got to help the mods. And we have the call to action page. People go out there and get active. And we need people to work that page. If you want to participate in the working of that page and helping to lay out, look, we have raw data of cases we got coming out. We got ideas on when these cases are going to hit for phone calls. And we need to put this together. And we need people, you know, again, to help write the ideas and some other information concerning this case.
Send me what you want me to do. And I have two choices. I can do it or I can't.
Yeah, but you see, you're asking the wrong person. I'm trying to tell you, get a hold of Gary, create the plan, work with him, because I'm busy doing other things. I'll never do that unless I lay everything else aside and do that.
All right. And you can't tell Gary to give me a call?
Well, Gary's not on the line right now, but if I remember tomorrow morning, I'll tell him. But look at get a hold of Jan, get a hold of Robert, get a hold of any of the, go to the directory and get a hold of any of the national leaders. Tell them that, put together a plan first. Say, look, you know, John says put together a plan, and if you can get together a good plan and we can get the leadership to agree, this is a good committee, let's work with it, or let's try to move it this way or that way and work with your plan, and let's execute it. And, you know, you're working maybe with a plan of some things we already have, and we can combine it together and get it going. But someone has to organize and maintain the necessary information that needs to go up on a weekly basis. Someone needs to write a little bit of a story that we can send out to the media. And, you know, all these things need to be done, and I can't do it all. So, you know, everybody needs to pipe in here and volunteer and take the bull by the horns again, you know?
All right. No, I'm going to let you go. I'll do that tomorrow. And, tomorrow for me is okay. Again, because I have the time. I'm in a nursing home. I don't have anything else to do. I don't talk to very many clients. I have much of my law practice is being done by other subordinates. And so I don't have much to do. I'll be glad to do this. I still got a brain power. From my neck up, I'm still pretty good.
Okay.
My body's not all as efficient as that, but my head still works.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get busy.
I'll call Linda and Gary tomorrow to see what I can arrange. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Right.
Look at
good
the
night.
Pusher.
God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you too. Okay. With that, we're going to have to end the call. It just turned over midnight. I'm totally exhausted. I never planned to be this long. Got a lot of work to do tomorrow. I apologize not getting to all the calls. But look, if you want to continue to talk about this, let's definitely talk about it on Monday. And we're going to be continuing to push this meeting. It'll be held by right now, I think, for a while. Carl will be running it, and he'll be pushing the leadership of the observers to run it eventually. And it'll be a short call, a half hour. Probably is about the length of the call it should be. It'll be really a focus of ideas and different things and trying to make things work a little better with what we're doing with this committee and this part of the project. So, okay, with that, thanks for everyone for coming. God bless. We'll see you hopefully on the Lord's Day and or on Monday's night's call. Good night.